All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 17th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. Great. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our participant code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on a donation tab up on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is in Matthew, chapter 13, 1 through 17. Excuse me. So chapter 13, 1 through 17. The same day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside, and great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so that he went into a ship and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spake many things unto them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow. And when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. Some fell among stony places, where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up, because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among the thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. But others fell onto good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, and some 60, and some 30-fold. Who hath ears to hear? Let him hear. And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever have not, from him shall be taken away even that he hath. Therefore speak I unto them in parables, because they seeing, see not, and hearing, they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, By hearing ye shall hear, and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see, and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear, and have not heard them. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 13, 1 through 17. And next week, we're going to read a little further where the Lord explains the parable and the meaning of the parables. But anybody wants to get some insight on that before then, they can read from verses 18 to the end of the chapter on chapter 13 of Matthew. Okay, let's see. Tonight's topic, okay. This week we did meet together. Quite a few people showed up to vote yay or nay on an indictment, and it was unanimous for an indictment. We did write up the papers for the indictment. They were mailed out today. We also sent a copy and a letter to President Trump. And hopefully we're going to read that tonight. Gerard, are you here?
Yep. Yes, I am.
Here. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Gerard's going to read those two papers, and then we'll see where we go from there. Gerard, if you could, read the indictment first. It's pretty short and sweet. You know, you don't have to quote them any numbers or anything. I don't think we did any quoting of any
ruling or anything,
but it was pretty short.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Okay.
Just let me get it up here. Computer's acting.
Well, if anybody would like to get a copy of that, we do have it up on file right now. So you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and you can click on, highlight grand jury, and then click on docket. And when you get to docket, the two papers that are going to be read is found under papers filed, and they are identified as, 1024-02. That's 1024-02, indictment of Judge Kahn. And the letter is an information to the president, and I'm looking where that is at. Now, I may not have put that up, but while Gerard is reading this paper, I'm going to put I'm going to make sure the letter's been put up there, and then when he's done, I'll identify it. Gerard, go ahead, start reading.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay.
We got you.
All right, so it's indictment, case number 1-16 CV-1490. Count 1 is concealment, and count 2 is felony rescue. And it begins. The grand jury charges that on or about June 14, 2017, at Albany, New York, in the Northern District of New York, Lawrence E. Kahn, defendant herein, with the intent to commit felony rescue by concealing murder, torture, manipulation of evidence, witnesses, and juries, and in order to incarcerate innocent people who are a threat to exposing judicial law enforcement corruption and RICO on a national level, conspiracy to supplant the law of the land with statutes, thereby replacing our republic with a corporatism, political incarcerations, denial of due process, robbing the people's homes and estates, taking people's children, running debtors' prisons, covering up and protecting pedophile rings, etc., all in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 4 and 18 U.S.C. 1001. Count 3, trespass upon the case. Count 4, denial of due process. Count 5, acting under color of law in an attempt to seize control of this court. Count 6, manufacturing unlawful order. Count 7, aiding and abetting. The record shows that on June 14, 2017, without any constitutional authority, self-appointed U.S. District Judge Lawrence E. Kahn, ignoring the random selection process that appointed Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart to this case, trespassed upon the case, conducting his own court without notice or concurrence of the parties, without notice to the administrator, Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart, without jurisdiction, without due process, and under color of law, acted in attempt to seize control of this court, an act of a tyrant, by manufacturing an unlawful order to dismiss this action without prejudice and thereby aiding and abetting. The law provides that the judiciary is to respond and not conceal, as was attempted by Judge Lawrence E. Kahn. Furthermore, without proper authority, self-appointed Judge Lawrence E. Kahn trespassed upon the case, and by his actions and statements assumed the cloak of a tribunal. Judge Lawrence E. Kahn then rendered a ruling under color of law by seizing control and applying the rules from jurisdictions foreign to this court without leave of court. A true bull, seal, dated July 17, 2017. So that's the indictment. And then we followed up with a information, President Trump.
Okay, before we go there, I just want to identify that as 1023-04. That's 1023-04, information to President. And it's not showing up yet, but it should show up in a few seconds. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay. Has the magistrate's name on the top, Daniel J. Stewart. That's who's supposed to be here anyway. Okay. Begins off. We have sent numerous communiques to Attorney General Jeff Sessions concerning a corrupt judiciary that is participating in and concealing and covering up innumerable crimes on a national level, including murder and cruel and unusual punishments. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has a duty to speak, but we have only been met with silence. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading, and that's U.S. versus Tweel and U.S. versus Pruden and Carmine versus Bowden. So Attorney General Jeff Sessions has a duty to prevent under 14 U.S.C. 1980, subsection 1986. Attorney Jeff Sessions has a duty to act under 18 U.S.C. subsection 4. We would like to remind you, Mr. President, that greatness can only be equated with justice, without which there can be no blessings from God. America was great because we exercised common law, which is God's law, without which there can be no justice. Thereby, America will only be just or corrupt as its court. And presently, justice cannot be found in our federal courts. And it appears that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is not interested in just court. You can repair health care, repair the economy, protect our borders, return business to America, and you can drain the swamp. But if you don't return justice to the courts, the bottom feeders will only regain their tyrannical rule, and after your administration leaves office, only the people can save America by enforcing justice in the courts. We respectfully request that you direct Attorney General Jeff Sessions to obey the law of the land and do his sworn duty or resign. Sealed, dated July 17, 2017, from the grand jury foreman. So that's it.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Turns out I did put up the file, but it went up in Word and not in PDF, so it's not showing up. That's just a technical thing. And I did just create a PDF out of it and put it up there, just checking to make sure that it is up there on the docket page, so that people can have a copy of that. 1024-04, information to president. Okay, so both of those documents are up there. And so this indictment is the first indictment we're doing on a federal level. I think it's a timely paper. We'll see how they respond to it eventually. Again, this is just another thing with pressure. We've got lots of other papers to file and continue to do certain things if they don't react and respond in a proper way. That'll unfold as we go forward. But this, again, is part of the pressure. We do know that the magistrate of the court, goodness, I forget his name. Anybody remember his name? The magistrate? In any event, the magistrate, you can find him on all the papers on the right-hand side. It tells you the magistrate, the name of the person, which is very interesting because for them to give us a magistrate, I wonder why they decided to do that. Now, of course, they are picked out of a pool. Judges are not to be assigned to a case by preference or education or desire or anything of that nature. The process is a pool, okay? So they pull a sort of out of a hat, you know, maybe just this next guy's chair, this next guy's position to take a case. And so when a case comes in, it's given to that individual. I know usually at first they do set forward a temporary individual, at least that's what I have noticed, and within a couple of weeks, and they assign a person. So however they do that process, that's the way it works, through a pool. So when this magistrate took control, you know, was given control of this case as administrator of the case, and he has been very quiet. He hasn't said anything. We've given him an order to sign some papers. He hasn't done that either. And before, I thought that before we should even start to pressure him on signing some of these defaulted papers, and we've got quite a few of them now, so all of these cases that are defaulting, he needs to sign. And before we send a paper for him to show cause by what authority he fails to act, okay, we kind of thought that it would be rather strategic to do this indictment first. The reason being mostly is because it would put more pressure on this guy. Clearly, this magistrate does not want to throw this case out because he knows it's wrong. At least I perceive that. I think he's afraid to act and do the wrong thing. So his only choice is to either do the right thing or not act. But that pressure of not acting can only go so long. Also, of course, we copied the president of this indictment, as we had read that paper. We copied Jeff Sessions, Jeff Sessions has not responded. This is like his first shot across his bow, so to speak, to let him know, to let the president know and others. We've got the three other individuals that we copy. Well, I believe it's three congressmen. So it's kind of a shot across his bow because we're saying to the president, either this guy is going to respond or he's not, and you got to get rid of him. He needs to resign because clearly he's not standing for justice, and he is participating at this point in concealment. So we're going to go after Jeff Sessions shortly, also, if we have to. But we'll see what happens and what comes of these papers. We'll give it a little time. And, of course, the other thing is really the pressure on this judge, this magistrate, shall I say. Now, like I said, I think our next move, there may be a paper before this that we may have to do, I'm not sure. But our next move, I know we've got a few papers to file, but our next real move is going to be for this magistrate to show cause by what authority he fails to act. Okay, and start putting him on and giving him a threat of being brought before the grand jury for an indictment also for the same thing, concealment, felony rescue, and so on. So we'll see where that goes. Now, we're going to do something a little different tonight before we move forward to go to Brent. Do we have any questions there, Jan?
We do have one, and you asked me to remind you that we need to have some words about Crystal's case at the start of the call tonight.
Okay, and who was going to talk on Crystal's case?
Crystal, I think.
Crystal. All right, we're going to set that aside for right now, Crystal's case, and we'll bring her up in a little while. How many questions? There's just one question. What's the question? We also have a short paper that we want to look at, but go ahead.
Okay. After filing a judicial cognizance to a judge in the state of Maryland and the judge does not respond, how would you suggest one proceed?
Well, again, you need a little more about the case, but I could probably tell you for sure that they violated due process, right? I would make a federal case out of it and cover all the bases there and make it clear that to the judge in the federal case, because I presume it's a state-level case, do they say?
I believe.
Okay. So move it into the federal court for cause, and of course, at that point in time, you want to write your papers without straight out telling the judge that you're going to hold him responsible and go after him too. But you kind of want to signal that in a roundabout way. And I think mainly just the action of the fact that you're going after a judge in a lower court, bringing him up there for failing to give you due process, I think that's kind of a shot across his bow to let him know, I don't have a problem putting you into becoming the defendant either. So that's the only place you can go with that. I'm going to be handling assisting in a case with a friend of mine, probably in the next week or two, where the judge must take note of certain facts, and I don't think he's going to, but we will let him know what the consequences of that, and that, you know, we would be moving this and going after him in this court for refusal to give due process and also obey the law. You know, there are certain things. I know in the paper that I'm putting together for this individual, there's a couple of points that the judge must obey. He must obey it, and therefore he must rule on our end. And if that's the case, that's kind of the realize you have to write the papers with that knowledge in mind and kind of get to that point. But that's the best I can give, just knowing generally what the case is about. Okay, anything else?
The only other thing, Robert B. had some comments that he would like to make.
Wait, before you go there, John, before we go on, I got something I want to, with this indictment and the dismissal.
Right, that's where I want to go also. Let's put Robert off till a little later. Let me just read this. I want to read this paper here. It's a short one, and make a few comments, and then we're going to take, then Gerard, you can start talking about that. And we're going to open up for Q&A for a short period of time before we take Brent in. I'd like to take Brent in maybe by 10 o'clock, let's say. And that gives us about 35 minutes of discussion focused in on what we have done this week, or anybody has any questions or comments, or even some advice, you know, we're here to take all that. So let me read this paper, Gerard, first, and then you can comment, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right, this is, it was suggested to me that I should read this and we should deal with this live over the air, so it becomes a record. I don't see this as really a big problem, but this person wrote a letter, and I just like to read this. This is a person actually who caused some problems a while back, and we had to. I don't remember. Did we remove
no.
membership, Lydia?
No. I think,
okay,
I
so
think
we allowed her to be.
Yeah.
Okay. We might have removed her ability to. Make some points. I don't recall, you know, being able to write things on our website, you know, make comments. I don't recall if we did or not. But in any event, there was a lot of problems with this individual and a small group that went along with her way back when. One of the big things is she had thought that we were doing this incorrectly and that my position should be voted in on and I should give up my position to someone else that we would vote. But that's not the way this works, nor could it work. Either someone has the ability and the knowledge to do what we're doing, and then we do it. You can't just vote anyone in to do something like what we are trying to do, to write these papers and to plan the strategy and to move things along. So anyway, that was kind of their mindset. They really didn't understand how we were going. Gerard, you're bleeding through if you can mute yourself.
Oh,
okay, so let me just read this letter that was sent to Terry, I believe. And I'm just going to make a few short comments about it. Okay, she starts off and says, you need to tell John Durash and others at National Liberty Alliance that they are making fools of themselves and otherwise setting themselves up for a legitimate civil and criminal prosecution because as crazy patriot idiots, they never bother checking any of their leads. Writs of errors were abolished by Act of Congress, by Acts of the People, and replaced by Rule 60 motions. Federal rules of civil procedure. John Durash and the other crazy patriot idiots never bothered going down to a law school library or even a public library and reading Moore's Federal Practice. Tells you just about everything you need to know. Never bothering to check Corpus Juris Secundum. Never bothered doing a little research on Lexis or Westlaw. Never bothered doing a little research using any of the other legal encyclopedias readily available in law school libraries, and never bothered reading the CPLR or the practice commentaries. Everyone has access to a law school library because as taxpayers, we have the right to use any law school library as federal depositories of federal documents, and it is not too hard to figure out a way to gain access to Lexis or Westlaw in a cost-effective way, either. In short, these crazy patriot idiots did not do their due diligence to do their research, and they should take Dr. Graves' online class, and there is another online class for as little as $49. In addition, John Durash intentionally, deliberately, read here with criminal intent, sets up the membership for failure and prosecution because the membership wants forums to discuss their cases and the things that they can do to win the ready and get remedy. And John and his mindless henchmen shut them down with stupid excuses that John is terrified that he will be criminally prosecuted for practicing law without a license and that they are practicing law, is that repeated? I guess it is, without a license, when all that they are doing is having a study group and a simple disclaimer made along those lines would stop any threat of prosecution for practicing law without a license. In sum, John Durash is doing disservice to the membership. Please tell him I said I am sure that John Durash will make up some excuse why it is okay for him to ignore acts of Congress. P.S. In criminal prosecutions, petitions for an abatement for misdemeanor were abolished, too, by acts of Congress. Okay, I only have a very short response to this. I mean, apparently this is an assaultive letter on one hand. And we did stop quite some time ago getting together and discussing cases. There are places people can do that. We need to stay focused, and we don't want to get lost. Also, if we did something like that, we would have to allow people the ability to run these rooms. And I certainly didn't have the time and still don't have the time to do anything like that. But in any event, then we'd have to have someone that we can trust and count on, that they're not going to bring in things that this woman brought in. And I'm going to make my point in a minute on that. The man on the land stuff, they could cause problems. You can't control what people are going to say. And National Liberty Alliance is not here to give advice in that way. We do try to assist in a general way, because all these cases could be dealt with, so ultimately they really are cut and dry. They could be dealt with for lack of due process. Every single case could be that I have ever seen anywhere, since, and I've been studying now and involved in the courts for almost 10 years now, and I have never seen a case that has not violated our due process rights every single time. Also, the rules constantly change. They never stay the same. So how can you even deal in a court like that? You have to move it and go right to the problem, and that is to sue for due process. And that's what you do when you go to federal courts. People will notice that I'm constantly talking about taking it into federal court for cause, for violating due process. There's one or two or three or even more constitutional violations, which are unalienable right violations, that you can bring up. But our purpose here at National Liberty Alliance is to spearhead the battle for liberty and for justice in the courtroom. That's our purpose. Everything else will and can be dealt with after we achieve that point. And in order to do that, we have to set up administrations in every county across the nation. We have to train people in a certain knowledges that they should have, civics and in the constitutional studies. We also are putting together a handbook to assist the people. But it's all about justice. It's all about remedy. And really getting rid of this idea we got to stop thinking we got to constantly put people in jail. People do all kinds of stupid things sometimes, and yeah, they've injured people, but they're not necessarily criminals, and they don't deserve to go to jail for that. What they need to do is pay restitution to the individual or individuals they've injured. Remedy is the focus of common law. For every injury, there must be a remedy. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Now, when talking about violent things, and I'm going to add also the things that these judges are doing, maybe jail is the appropriate thing, and we'll have to figure that out. And every jury can figure that out on their own. Some of them, whatever it is, the people got to figure that out. I'm not going to tell people what they have to do, because each case is different. For two or three cases that may appear to be the same, one may require jail and another one may not. Again, that's up to the people in the jury, and again, they have to come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's the only way we're going to be able to get our courts back and do the right thing. But my answer to all these things ultimately is, yes, I do ignore the acts of Congress. I do ignore anything that is abolished by acts of Congress. I very rarely go into NextLexis, I think it's called. Matter of fact, we have a access into that program, Lexis something. I haven't used it in quite some time because I no longer believe that you should, or we should, anybody should use federal district court decisions to benefit their case. Basically, that's what they're calling common law, you know, using the law and what's common in the decision making. The only cases I ever quote is United States Supreme Court cases. And of course, any case that's going to support our position, we'll use that, because that trumps every federal court. That trumps every decision or idea any judge wants to make. And there are a lot of great, great decisions from the United States Supreme Court over the past 200 years. Fantastic decisions. So my answer to all of this that this person has brought up is Marbury versus Madison. I think that was in 1802 or 1803. So I'm just going to read this is out of a few different U.S. Supreme Court rulings. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. So when Congress thinks that they can come up and they can get rid of habeas corpus, getting rid of habeas corpus, by the way, is just a statutory process of due process. How can you get rid of due process? So a court, you know, cannot do that, of course, not righteously, not lawfully. So that's Marbury versus Madison. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. Those statutes which would deprive a citizen of the right of person or property without a regular trial according to the course and usage of a common law would not be the law of the land. That's Hoke versus Henderson. So that's my answer to why I would ignore codes and statutes. And again, I'll use those codes and statutes if they benefit us. We just used two codes, which was appropriate to use. These people are elected individuals on the federal level or appointed. No, in this case, they're appointed. They're appointed individuals. They have power and authority. And these statutes were written to control them. And so we did use those statutes because they were appropriate to use. So whenever it is appropriate and beneficial to our position to use a statute or a code or whatever you want to call it, we will. We will ignore any and all codes that are repugnant to the Constitution. We will ignore any and all decisions that are repugnant to the Constitution. We will ignore and reject any and all legislation that is repugnant to the Constitution. All of that is null and void. It's a very, very simple position that we hold here, and it could be applied over and over and over again, and it becomes so simple, okay? Let's just focus in on our unalienable rights and the violations thereof. If our unalienable rights are not being violated, guess what? We're in a just court, aren't we? If we get in due process, we're in a just court. If we have a jury that is unshackled, okay, which is free and not a puppet jury, not politically decided to, chosen, then we're in a just court, aren't we? If we have the jury nullification and the jury is clearly made aware of this and understands that, then we're in a just court. If the jury understands that it's them who decide what the punishment might be with the eye on restitution and not jail, then we're in a just court, aren't we? That's the focus of where we have to be. And when the jury has that power and authority and understands that power and authority, then we're in a just court. And that's why we, the people, need to take control of the administration of the juries, whether they're grand juries or trial juries. And these trial juries or these grand juries should have access to an investigative body that works on their behalf. And if they actually want to go out, the jury itself wants to actually go down someplace and look into books or computers or desks or question people. And it's their right to do so, and we will facilitate that. That is the making of just courts. So anyway, that's our positions on that. And it was thought by the leadership here that it might be important to read this and deal with it. I know this person does have a lot of people involved in following them down in New York City. And maybe it'll be helpful to those people why our position is different than what she wants. Okay, Gerard, did you want to make a comment now? Because what we're going to do now for the next half hour or so, 25 minutes to a half hour, is focus in on only calls, comments, or questions or anything on the papers we have just filed. And at about 10 o'clock, we'll move over. We'll take Robert on, and then we'll move over to Brent. Gerard, you wanted to comment? I'm going to open up anybody who has questions, comments, or advice or anything concerning the indictment and the papers we wrote and the letter we wrote to the information letter we wrote to President. Please get into the queue. Anything else, any other questions or comments or directions, we'll deal with after this. But Gerard, go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple things. First of all, Lydia has not grasped what common law is, doesn't understand where we're coming from or why. She does fantastic study on the codes and statutes. You can do that all day long, but what happens is you become a lawyer. And with all the downfalls of being a lawyer, And there have been some lawyers that have beat cases because they got the system into a horn dilemma with their own statutes. But they never win again after that because they fix it. When you leave the court, then they change the statute and they close the hole that you found. And so there's a lot of dancing around in their courts that's purposely done like that in order that's how they obfuscate the truth. And they're able to put things over things because they have so many places that they can dance and you have to follow them. And it's very frustrating, and it's also opens the door for all these abuses. You know, actually, Lydia would do very well if she would just take our Constitution course and our civics course and then go back and look at what she's studying. And now she will understand where those things fall down in relationship to the Constitution. Look, you cannot abrogate common law. The fact that the judge in New York said the common law has been abrogated in New York is ridiculous, because the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, we know those are common law documents. If you can abrogate common law, you can abrogate the Constitution. So I don't want to get lost in all that, but that's you know, what I see. She doesn't understand we're doing an Article III court. We're not under those rules. We don't want to be under those rules. And when you go into their courts and you play by those rules, what you're doing is you're giving that system credibility. It says in the Bible, why do you go into their courts looking for justice? Well, guess what? We don't go into their courts. We go into the people's courts that are under God, under the Constitution, and under those laws that this nation was instituted on. They are so far away from that, you can't even compare the two. So that's the difference. And if you don't understand that, that's because you don't understand what the basis of this country is. You don't understand the Constitution and how it relates to civics and as far as the separation of powers and all that. You need to know that before you can defend it. If you don't know what your heritage is, you can't defend it. And you're going to just keep playing these games, these Chinese checkers with these people, and you're going to keep falling down, because at the end of the day, when you're in their court, you're run by them, and they are the king. They are the chancellor, or whatever you want to call it. And so ultimately, you could do a very wonderful job, and then they can cut your feet off or your head off at the end of the day, and you lose anyway. So that's all I want to say about that. Now, the other thing, John, I just got this dismissal from the court, from the Northern District of New York, and I think we should post it. And it says judgment in a civil case, docket number, blah, blah, blah. And they it says plaintiff, grand jury, comma, sovereigns of the court. I think that's great that he called us that. So now he made a decision against the grand jury, sovereigns of the court. Imagine that. Against U.S. Congress et al. Defendants. And then they have two spots. This is a form letter that was signed by the clerk announcing this dismissal by the judge. And so it says there's two spots, one for a jury verdict. This action came before the court for trial by jury. The issues have been tried, and the jury has rendered a verdict. Or two, the next one, which they double X, decision by a court. This action came to trial or hearing before the court. The issues have been tried, and the decision has been rendered. So I didn't know we had a hearing before the court. Did you, John? I mean, that's what they're claiming.
No, not at all. When did this paper come?
July 17, 2017.
Oh, this is, okay. This, well, now we'll meet them with our indictment, too, then. But go ahead.
They gave you 30 days to become a lawyer. And so they waited, and then they, because you're not a lawyer, they issued the paper, right? So,
and we answered that. Clearly, they're not reading any of the papers. They don't care to read the papers. They're shuffling, you know, sweeping it under the rug, so to speak. But again, you know, look, we're copying three individuals in Congress, the Judicial Committee and Chavez and what's that other guy's name? Those three congressmen. And also, of course, the President of the United States and Jeff Sessions. And now with our papers that we filed and sent out today, it's very interesting because is it actually dated the 17th or you just got it the 17th?
No, it says date, July 17th.
Okay, because that's today.
Right. Carl just found it on Pacer.
Oh, it was actually filed today. Okay, yeah, send me a copy of that in my Skype here.
It's in your Skype bin, John. I put it there an hour ago.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Gerard.
Well, that's it. I just thought it was interesting the way they wrote it, what they called us, and how they went about this. This is a very interesting paper. And, you know, they're acknowledging us as the grand jury sovereigns of the court.
Well, again, we're going to, and who signed it?
Well, the clerk, Bremen, but it was by the order of the Judge Lawrence E. Kahn.
So that's the guy we sent him. We already sent him a writ of error. We overturned his decision.
Right.
And then we indicted him. We just sent the indictment in. We copied the president. Look, at this is more fodder to show the president, you know. I think we're going to put together a very, very in-depth letter or information, shall I say, concerning all these things. I mean, look, they're covering up murder. They're covering up pedophilia rings. They're covering up abuse of prisoners. I mean, you want talking about abuse, talking about, what is it, cruel and unusual punishment. Look what they've done to the Bundys, okay? And of course, all these other cases. We've got so many cases, and we're going to just continue to pile our information into the court. We're also going to send a writ of error to the clerk who forwarded this, and again, you know, we'll see what we'll do. We'll figure out a paper to write directly on this one along with our indictment. But go ahead. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I just thought that people should, you know what's going on, and maybe we'll post this as part of the evidence, you know, as part of the case. It is part of the case.
Right.
And we'll see what happens. But that was all. I just think it's important that everybody knows, you know, what's going on as far as, you know, the paperwork going back and forth.
Okay, let's take some questions. We've got a few people in the queue here. And again, we're only interested in talking about the case here, particularly the indictment we've done, the paperwork we filed. Anything on that in that area? Anything outside of that, you know, bring that up a little later. Okay. But we got Crystal. Go right ahead, Crystal. Crystal?
Hello.
How you doing? I know you wanted to bring something up, but we can talk about your case in a little while. First, we want to focus in on this for the next 15 to 20 minutes. Then we want to move over to Brent and then back to Q&A again. But go ahead.
Okay. I got another letter from the attorneys from the court.
Okay, we're going to talk about that a little later, Crystal, because
Okay.
Right now we want to focus in on the indictment we've done, the writ of error we've written, or anything else recently that's going on in our court case. People may have questions and so on. So what you might want to do is leave the Q&A and hit star 6 again, and you'll be underneath three or four people, and you'll come up first. Okay?
Okay.
All right. 301, first name and state, area code 301.
Hi, this is Deani from the state of Maryland.
How you doing? What's your first name again?
Deani.
Deani. Go ahead, Deani.
Yes, I just wanted to ask a quick question about the filings that you have on your site. I know that you conglomerated all of these filings together that you got via affidavit and filed them all into a federal court, and this is the case that we're dealing with this judge not wanting to hear all of this. Should we also include those filings that are our own in locally in the court in our state?
If you have an affidavit that you'd like to add concerning, and you know, this misjustice in the court, not getting due process or anything of that nature, you can write your affidavit, and we'll add it into the case. At some point in time, it'll have to be dealt with. But we don't want to get any traffic violations or things of that nature. We really want to get into the more serious cases. You know, people are potentially in jail or going to jail, maybe losing their homes or...
non-judicial foreclosure. Should we file that writ in our local court?
You could take a copy to that and file it with the county clerk, okay? to let it be known that this case is open concerning your home, or, you know, so it'll be attached to the, you know, the information on your goodness, I can't think of the name. But anyway, they'll attach it to your property, okay? And then you could take it to the court. You could take it to the court, which they've already been notified, but you could take it to the court and file it with the clerk to make sure that it gets into the court and isn't concealed, that it's part of the court case that's going on, that's attached to your court case. And that should be something enough to really stop these people, at least while it's in the court. Now, they're going to default on these nonjudicial foreclosures. There's no getting away from that. I can't see any way they can answer that. And in their default, the requirement is to return the individual back to their original state before, this was brought up against them. So if you already lost your home, the default would require them to return your home. And if that's an impossible task, or if it's a very difficult task and the individual is willing to work something else out, they can get whatever the cost of their home would be. But that's what we're writing up in the wherefore clause, should they default. And they will default. We've got numerous, numerous defaults that we're going to be filing soon.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay, next caller. Gerard, go ahead.
I just want to add, that was a good question. Should we file them in our case? If you can put an affidavit in this big case and you have a case in your state, even in the federal court, you should file it and let them know you're part of this case. That's important.
True. Yeah. That's even with the affidavits. But don't do it until you see affidavit put up there.
Right.
You know, we have to approve the affidavit first, and, we're going through that process. And once, the key thing is that people don't try the case in their affidavit. They don't do the man on the land stuff. And they don't get lost in, we don't want them quoting court cases. In other words, you're not to try the case in an affidavit. Your affidavit just makes the statement of facts on what happened to you. And that has to be dealt with at some point in time. So your case does, that affidavit does become part of our case.
Right. And so potentially, you could say, well, listen, you can't move on this case until that big case is decided because that case affects my case. And that's what we're hoping for.
Correct.
Of course, right now it looks like our case is dismissed. So we have to have them acknowledge that it is not dismissed. So that's the next step, because right now they'll say, you're in a case that's been dismissed. So we have to deal with that too. But
okay. All right, let's go to Eric, VoIP dialer. Eric, go right ahead, Eric. What state are you in?
Yeah, this is Eric in Georgia.
How you doing, Eric?
I'm good. Good to speak with you again. Last week I told Gerard I would write something up for him concerning this indictment, because they mentioned wanting to have something written up. So I wrote something up for him, and I could read it. It's not all that long, to see if I get the gist of it. But one question I have, I mentioned in here what I wrote, and it seemed to me that it was this way, but wasn't it a unanimous decision to indict?
Yes, it was unanimous. Not one person went the other way.
Okay. Well, I could either read this to you now, or I could just get Gerard's email, because I've tried Gerard at NLA before, and it doesn't work. So I get your opinion now.
Well, I think you have to write out National Liberty Alliance for him. He doesn't have an NLA address. He's got nationallibertyalliance.org.
I've tried that.
Okay. Aren't you on Skype? Aren't you connected with us on Skype?
Oh yeah, I am.
Drop it in Gerard's Skype or my Skype in. We'll drop it in mine, Gerard and Jan's.
Okay.
Take a look at it and let's look at it before we get too far into discussion on it, and maybe next Monday you can read some of it if you want or whatever.
That sounds great. I'll do that, and I don't necessarily have to read it. I just wanted to get y'all's opinion and approval on it. So, but if you like it, absolutely, I'll do it if you want. But whatever, okay, I appreciate that.
Just so everybody knows, people should not drop anything into my Skype bin unless we've already talked first. I ignore a lot because I have no choice but to ignore a lot. And so lots of things get lost. There are lots of things I've gotten a lot of Skype Skype mail and documents. I have no clue what it's about. I've not been, you know, given any information concerning it before I open it up and then start reading it, and then it gets involved maybe and I have to respond. I can't do that. I just don't have the time. You know, if somebody wrote me occasionally, you know, if I got an email like that maybe once a week or something, I might be able to respond, but I just can't. But once you get a hold of me, if it's something that we could, that I have the time to look at, if it's an interesting thing that might work towards what we're doing, you know, we'll work to answer. You could try to get to me through Gerard or through Jan, and they'll kind of look through it to see if they think it's important for me to see it. And sometimes they can help you, and you don't necessarily need me either. So, but anyway, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'll just drop it in, and I'll say indictment of Khan blog, something like that. So
yeah,
so just
yeah, we
look
definitely
up.
Want to see that because we want you to put that blog out there. Let's try to respond on that tomorrow, Jan and Gerard, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
And then hopefully next Monday we'll make the announcement. We'll put out a newsletter or the blog, you know?
Yeah, okay. And feel free, all three of you, feel free to fix what I've messed up or whatever, okay?
Yeah, we'll take a look and make sure it's accurate and not misleading or anything of that nature.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Okay, let's take Fred from California. Go right ahead, Fred.
Yes, John. I was wondering, wouldn't it now be appropriate to get the courtroom observers and an investigation team of the grand jury with indictment in hand, walk right into that guy's courtroom and ask him why the people weren't summoned to be there during some litigation and why this all happened by mail and where
yeah, well,
the prosecute?
Because, yeah, it is all a fraud. I'd be very careful about physically going up there or sending people physically because they'd love to find a face and a name. But you know, basically, we have a paper. We're going to respond with this, and on this particular paper, and we'll probably do it this week and read it next Monday. Hopefully we'll have it out before this week is out, but we'll read it next Monday, and we're going to ignore it. Believe me, what are they going to do, throw our papers away? We're going to serve notice onto the clerk and make it clear to them that this case, that his opinion, that his unconstitutional, illegal, or unlawful, that's the word, unlawful decision, without any authority, this self-appointed judge just walked into the room. This is null and void. We've already given a writ of error, and we're going to let the clerk know if they remove, destroy, or conceal any papers we continue to put into this case, that we will indict that clerk also. Plus, we're going to be pushing the magistrate. Did anyone look up the magistrate's name while we were talking? Jan, do you know who his name is on our case? But anyway, that particular magistrate, okay, we want to serve him notice of his failing to do his administrative duties and what the consequences that's going to be. And look, I got to believe, look, the bottom line on this thing is really that magistrate. I don't believe this magistrate in any way, shape, or form is going to go along with this guy. I could see that he's frightened, no doubt about that. And he's just being completely silent. But at some point, that silence turns to fraud. And now is the time to let him know that his silence is becoming fraud. And we're going to deal with him and bring him before the full grand jury for a considered indictment for fraud and concealment and so on and so forth that's connected to that fraud, you know? But physically going up, we wouldn't do that.
I wanted to say that somebody up there understands a whole lot more than they're pretending. Look, the fact that they gave us a magistrate means that somebody understood that, and maybe they thought that was going to make life easier for them if they put a magistrate instead of a judge and then bring the judge in to flank us like they just did with the judge. Because the magistrate, we said the magistrate has no power. But he said, okay, we'll give him a magistrate with no power, and then we'll come in with a judge when the time is right. We'll squash him. So,
yeah,
you know,
but what is a judge? What is a judge? All
right,
judges,
well, they don't understand. The judge believes that he owns the court because he belongs to an international association that tells him he owns the court and that he can make law from the bench. Of course, they believe all this crap. You know, and don't and don't doubt that they had a little bit. You know that? Remember that commercial with the "I'm not going to eat it, you eat it. I'm not going to eat it, you eat it. Give it to Mikey. He doesn't like anything."
Yeah, Mikey likes it.
Look, some of that probably went on, and that's how this magistrate got there. He probably turned around to the judge and said, "I'm not going to do it. You do it."
Well, so, yeah, but bear in mind, what's very interesting is our papers dated the 17th, too, and it was mailed out today. They're going to have it tomorrow, okay, which is the indictment and the letter to the president concerning an information, you know, the information to the president and a copy, again, you know, look at. They should be shaking in their boots because they don't know how to deal with us. We've been there so long to begin with. What's this? We're in the seventh month. We're in 8 months in that courthouse, in that court case. Well, almost 8 months. We're a little over 7 months. So, yeah, look, this case is going to continue. There's no way they can throw it out, and we're going to continue to pile papers in there. We have so much to pile in. You know, we it's only the tip of the iceberg what we got in there right now. We got so much stuff. But go ahead, Gerard.
No, that's it. Well, I just, John. You know, this is the strategy of the court, and this is the punch and counterpunch that you receive. So it's going to get interesting, to say the least. Go ahead,
Dan.
Yeah, Dan? The magistrate is Daniel J. Stewart, and I didn't think
Stewart.
To check to see if he is a living, breathing person. Maybe we should do that.
Yeah, let's look into his background, see who he is, and, you know, figure that out. So we'll
you mean,
Google him.
You mean he's a straw man, Jan?
Yeah, I'm wondering.
Okay, let's take our next person. Thanks, Fred. Did you want to
finish up
something? Yeah, go ahead.
Just one last comment. I've noticed that in all of your writings, I have never seen the phrase, "time is of the essence." Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering why time isn't of the essence when we've got people
in
jail.
Yeah, time is of the essence. Yeah, time is of the essence. Yeah, but time is of the essence, of course. I've never made that point. We do have to give them the time to respond, of course. But as far as our habeas corpus are concerned, we have done habeas corpuses, which I'd love to get back to if we can get some volunteers maybe with some background in the law that could write these, you know, it's really, the paper's already written. We just have to, you know, curtail it around the individual. So if anybody wants to volunteer that has some background in this, maybe as a, what do they call them, legal, what's the word I'm looking for, people who assist the lawyers.
Paralegal.
Paralegal.
Yeah,
if we can get someone that's got paralegal experience,
experience
with papers in court. But let me just finish this point. So hold on, let me just finish this point. So if we can get someone with that to help us do more habeas corpuses, we definitely would do it. I'd love to do many of them a week if we could. But habeas corpuses, they've got 3 days. 3 days, and so that is time of the essence because you got an individual that's incarcerated, and they need to respond. And 3 days is too long, in my opinion. But that is what is agreed to, even statutorily, that 3 days is the maximum. As a matter of fact, and they can request more, and we can give up to 20 days. So, but of course, it would have to be a really good reason. You know, I broke my leg, or I'm going on vacation, we'll get someone else to handle the case because we got someone sitting in jail. We wouldn't give them a permission of anything more than 3 days. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, now my other point was this. You would never mention attorney fees or court costs. Now, I understand that you believe that's part of the fiction and the fraud, but as long as we're playing in their arena, we need to point fingers at the money. And how
well,
it's fraudulent
we have
Article 3 courts.
We went after the clerk. Nothing has happened with the clerk. They never responded to the paperwork to show cause. They didn't show cause. They just ignored it. So they defaulted, and we send that paperwork to the judge for signature. He has not signed it. That's one of the things he should have signed. We also have the gun law matter. Right now, as it stands, they defaulted. Every gun law in New York State is null and void, ultimately, according to this court case. And we served both Congresses in New York, and we served the governor, and all three of them defaulted. Okay, so there's two cases right there. We have other cases, but let's stick with those two cases. Those two cases right there They have defaulted, and we have to move on. Now, I think it's time to look towards, first of all, a show cause to this this judge, and then with that show cause, if we have to, we need to go forward with a an indictment. And even if our indictments pile up, it's okay if the indictment goes through and the trial doesn't start for a month or two or three or four or more. That's okay. It's still there. It's in court. Record is being kept. It's kept on our website. It's kept on their paperwork. And it's also being kept by the president and Attorney General Sessions and three congressmen. One who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. So, you know, hey, we got a lot of stuff going and pressure going down. But go ahead.
Okay, I was wondering about courtroom observers where the Bundys are involved, where they're being drugged through another court case. They tasered.
We have put up alerts out for that, and I've got some more paperwork that I got in on Bundys. We got so much stuff we want to lay out on Bundy, and we just haven't been able to get around to it. Again, we need volunteers. We need help. So anybody with the skills of maybe a little background with with papers, particularly on a paralegal level or something, that can help us, please go to get a hold of Jan. You can find him under the directory and let him know that you can give us some of your time and you'll assist us in some paperwork. But all right, Fred, what else?
Well, those were a few of the concerns I had. Was basically time of the essence, attorney fees and cart costs, something that there shouldn't even be. And,
right.
And
well, we did deal with that in the initial filing the case.
I understand that.
But we can't continue to stay on. Yeah.
You come in with a forklift pallet full of paper, and these guys aren't even reading your briefs. So
no, they're not. They don't have to.
It's in
the
haystack
somewhere. The only one that needs to be doing it is the magistrate, and a magistrate only for the purpose of finding out when they need to administrate. Until that point in time, you know, we don't need anything. Now that we have our first indictment, now the pressure is on for our prosecutor. And that's why we sent that letter to the president, that information to the president concerning Jeff Sessions, that we have communicated with him three times, and he has remained totally silent. And silence is a fraud when he has a duty to speak. And we made a number of points in that letter. We're now moving forward. You know, these things do take time, and you do have to give them so many days to respond. You can't send something in and say, respond in 3 days. Unless it's understood certain things like habeas corpus, respond in 3 days. There are certain things that are laid out, must be responded in maybe 10 days or 20 days. But generally speaking, you've got to give them the time to respond. We got to be reasonable. And we are. And remember, we're also looking for one of two things, which hasn't happened yet, critical mass or the president actually really letting his cards be shown that he's behind us and doing something, because either one of those, that will give us critical mass. So critical mass is the key to the success of this project. And we have over 6,200 plus people. And what is our membership now? You can find it on our front page. You can find it on every page on the right-hand side. Our membership right now is 6,220 people. We have 1,003 grand jury administrators. And then, of course, we have lots of other leadership roles, quite a few people. So we're building, we're getting there, you know?
I have one more thought that just struck my mind. I'm not sure how valid this would be. But on the courtroom observers, we have a gentleman that likes to talk about FOIAs, Freedom of Information.
Uh-huh.
And it dawned on me that in charge of the Department of Justice and everybody associated with it is a little branch. I've mentioned this before. It's not the Attorney General. It's actually the that other little office, the one that does the accounting and all of that. I can't think of his name. It's not the Attorney General. It's the he's some kind of an oversight committee. he does auditing of the Department of Justice and all of that. But anyway, that would be where you would file your FOIA and find out the progress of these court cases and where they are and how come there isn't a prosecutor yet. I think that's where you would make the waves.
Are you talking about the committee that reviews the judicial decisions or actions or anything of that nature for purpose of correcting them?
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm trying to think of the name of that. Yeah, there is a. But look at Gerard. What's that group that does the judiciary oversight? I think that's what it is. Judiciary oversight. Oh,
The Inspector General.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the Inspector General's role, but I'll look into that.
The Inspector General is part of the Department of Justice, but the Inspector General is the one that can audit and allocate money and funding and look for any kind of problems.
Yeah, but if the United States Attorney General is not going to do his job, then we can't expect any attorney general anywhere to do their job. And remember, we're on a federal level, and there's only one United States, attorney general. Of course, there are U.S., what do they call them? U.S. attorneys, okay, that work for the attorney general.
John, the inspector general is the one that looks for fraud in these agencies.
Hey, is that the federal level?
Yes, he would be the guy to
look into
the marshal's office, the marshals,
yeah.
Why they're not enforcing.
I'll look into that, and we'll send him a copy of the case, and we'll put a letter or something to him if we feel that this is something he should be, dealing with. I mean, we'll talk to anyone.
Okay,
so
is first you get a FOIA on the Inspector General and his powers and obligations and duties.
Well, we could just look that up on the internet.
Well, maybe you can look it up.
Yeah,
but then from that, you can take action. I mean, here we're looking at a third-tier level bureaucrat sitting there with all this damn power. And all it takes is, if you don't do this, pal, your tail's on the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just did that with Jeff Sessions. We spoke directly to the president and copied Jeff Sessions on this. He is the guy that should be taking care of this business. He is the guy that's supposed to be making sure our courts are just. He is the guy that can deal with judges. Look at the attorney general can go after judges for bad behavior, and he doesn't. He hasn't. That tells me right away, if they're incapable of seeing that there is such a big problem with these judges all across this nation, and they're not doing anything about it, that tells me something. Because the attorney general should be doing an investigation, bringing things together, and calling a grand jury and looking for an indictment after these judges.
Eastern Russia, Kamchatka.
But they haven't done it.
Well, Congress can go after these judges as well, and they're not doing it. Everybody's dropping
that's
the
right.
ball.
That's right. Congress can too, because they're afraid, because they probably have something on them, you know?
Oversight committees are a joke. I mean, it's a rubber stamp for all kinds of corruption.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, anyway, let's move on, but I will look into this Inspector General to see if there's anything that we can get help from him. We'll give him a shot, hey, you know?
You might even be able to find funds for your grand jury. That would be the best of all.
Well, that would be nice, yes. Okay, we have a plan for that, but only after we get empowered. And once we're empowered, we have a plan on monies for every administration within every county, you know, for the grand jury and trial jury. So, okay,
I'm
Fred.
This guy's in charge of the funding for the whole ball of wax.
Okay.
Okay.
We'd be looking on a county level. Remember, we would draw straws, if a federal case came up on an individual, okay, depending on what county that individual is being charged in, we would then make notification. We're going to work a system of that county in order to sit any grand jury in the state in that district can indict, but as far as a trial jury, we'd want to look for within that county. if there was a court case that's a federal court case against an individual, which I would think would be very rare once the law is being obeyed. I mean, most of these federal court cases are all bogus. They're fraud. They're all involved with RICO and so on. So, all right. Thanks a lot, Fred. Okay, let's go to our next caller, James from New Mexico.
Yeah, I was just James? Wondering, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, I was just wondering, was that dismissal by Kahn, is that with prejudice? And has 30 days actually expired? He gave 30 days either.
I don't think it has. They're just trying to get us out of the courts, but they're not going to get us out of the courts. That paper's not going to do anything. It's not going to stop us from filing. It's not going to stop us from communicating. It's not going to stop us from indicting. All that is more fodder for us to make the point of the corruption, of the cover-up, of federal, what is it called, well, concealment, cover-up, acting under the law. I mean, this guy is a fraud to begin with. This is not his case. He doesn't belong in that courtroom. He wasn't chosen to hear it. He just decided to grab hold of it. Of course, someone told him to do that. But we're also looking at felony rescue in all these cases. And once they get involved in this and conspiracy, and it's very easy now to connect the dots. That's why we're putting it all in one case of all these judges, which makes it conspiracy. Now, they all become part of that murder, don't they? Once they get involved in that conspiracy, because they're covering up, they become part of that murder of Lavoy Finnegan, of that assassination.
I just
and
wonder if
a lot of other things.
I just wonder if his or their plan is to try to force you into having to appeal that. You know, like they're not listening to us.
If they're not reading our papers, if that's their plan. You would think if they wanted to get a good plan to deal with us, you would think they'd read the papers and try to figure a way. But obviously, even if they did read the papers, there is no way for them to deal with us other than give us justice. That's the only way they can deal with us is by giving us justice. And they're not going to do that because they fear jail. So they're going to do the tighten up and try to do everything they can to prevent us from coming in. But we're going to keep spearheading into this court, and they're not going to be able to take it away from us.
All right, thanks for answering that.
Okay, thanks, James. Appreciate the call. Okay, what we're going to do, and I apologize to... hold on a second. Let me see what we got here. Yeah, I guess we still have a few more minutes. We need to deal with a few things. But, Brent, I apologize to you that we're kind of running late on you, but we'll get to you in a short while. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take on Robert. Jan, you said Robert had something that he wanted to share?
I think he did. He's still online here. You can check with him.
Robert, can you unmute yourself?
Yes. The trial in Vegas, they had their opening statements now, so the trial is starting. And they've ruled that the defense can't talk about a lot of the different subjects, such as what the BLM, what they did, you know.
Is that in that? I know Jan sent me a some kind of a newsletter something online. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I sent him some information, but they've almost curtailed defense into having nothing, but at the same time they're allowing prosecution to have free reign, whatever they want.
Yeah, this is the way that they go about. This is status quo for them. This is their I can't think of the word I'm looking for. But anyway, they do this all the time. I've seen this in so many cases. They'll spend a year of just hearings just so that they can beat down the defendant's case so that they have nothing, no witnesses, no documents, nothing. They have nothing to go into court with.
Right.
And, of course, they don't have the authority. These are all summary judgments. You can't do this. You can't do that. Okay,
but
I have a right to bring in a crazy man if I want.
They're not allowing defense to put on a defense. So, you know, they're trying to stack. They have the deck stacked to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the last time we really had information on Joe Robertson, we got the word that he was supposed to be released in June. That didn't happen. And I just got the word that they delayed it now to release him in September.
Yeah, they
but
don't
we
stop.
We also have a court hearing in Seattle on Joe Robertson in August. At the end of August, the 29th.
Well, I think didn't we do a habeas corpus for Joe Robertson? Did we ever get around to
that?
Yeah,
we did.
Okay, so you know what? Maybe that'll be the next paper we'll do. This judge needs to show cause why this man has not been released yet and by what authority he holds him. And we'll make some of these points.
And also, I have the full list of all the P3 prisoners, but I can't find a list of who all has HCs made up on them.
Yeah, we have a whole list. I'll get that to Jan. I didn't want to post that stuff at this point yet, and for strategic reasons at this point in
well,
time. I'll give you a full copy on that. Just we don't want to post it at this point. But I think what we will start posting is the show causes concerning the habeas corpuses, and that we will post. And then we'll be able to get a list of all of the individuals. And I'll give you that list if you give me a call tomorrow sometime. And what I'll do is I'll drop it in your box. That's what I'll do.
We could charge AG Sessions with jury tampering.
Well, first, let's see if we can push him to do the right thing, okay, because
he went to Nevada. He went to the courthouse, and he made a statement that he would not take sides in the Bundy case. But then he turned right around, and he praised the district attorney on his handling of the Bundy case.
Hmm.
And I think that is tampering.
Well, that also tells us a lot about this guy, Jeff Sessions. Look at... We're going after him next, him and potentially the magistrate. Those are the two targets at this point. We first want to give them some more, you know, want to give them the show cause, want to give them the ability to respond and tell us why, or just do the right thing. You know, if they start doing the right thing, they don't even have to answer our papers. And we'll tell them what that right thing is. We'll make that clear. If they default, then we'll start talking about maybe having a... Another consideration for an indictment.
Well, I just wanted to update you on some of that. That's about all I have. I don't have a lot of videos coming out now about the opening day of the trial, so I'll get some of that to Jan.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me move on to Crystal, and then we're going to move over to Brent, if you're done.
All right. I'm done.
Okay.
I yield.
You can bring more information next week if you got it. All right. Thanks,
All
Robert.
Right.
Just a point. You know, someone mentioned to me that, you know, shouldn't we be doing presentments and not indictments? And the reason why we're doing indictments is because, first of all, people understand that. But second of all, remember that the grand jury is coming in ultimately as the people, and the prosecutor should be taking this information, should be given to a prosecutor in order to take this information to bring it before the grand jury and for the cases to be considered. And we can't seem to get a U.S. prosecutor at this point, and of course that's what we're working on. That's what we're talking to the president about. That's what we're talking to Jeff Sessions about. And we're not getting anywhere yet, but we're moving towards that way. But in any event, because of that, then we have to act as prosecutor as far as bringing the case before the grand jury. And that's why we're doing an indictment. I don't want to confuse people with a presentment. Also, I've looked at presentments the way they've been written. And they're actually, when a presentment is written, and I've seen this in a case in California recently, when I was looking on different forms of writing presentments and indictments. And what I did see is it was almost a request to the Justice Department for consideration and execution of the indictment. And I just couldn't believe what I was reading. But that's how bad it's gotten. The people can indict and address this problem, the Justice Department could decide not to prosecute. And that's an amazing, amazing thing to consider, that that is what's happening. I mean, that tells us there is no justice anywhere in any of these courts. Okay, let me move on. I'm going to go to Crystal. Crystal, try to keep this short, because after you I want to move over to Brent, and we're running late. But I did not want to move forward until we opened up some kind of a discussion concerning, you know, what we've been doing with our paperwork recently. But Crystal, go right ahead. You got the mic. Crystal, are you there? You're unmuted. Unless you got yourself muted on your side, on your Skype, or if you're coming in at Skype or phone. Crystal. Crystal once. Twice. Three times. All right, maybe she's away from her phone. Gerard, I'm going to mute her. So I'm going to pass the controls over to you. But once Brent's finished, you're going to want to go over in the box here and unmute her as the first caller. If you hit the next question, you're going to knock her out of the box, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to pass the control of the – I already muted her. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, but it should come up. And then you can unmute her and then start pushing the next question. We'll move over to Brent. Brent, are you here? I didn't even look to see if he was in tonight. Is Brent here tonight? I don't see Brent. Do you see Brent here, Jan?
No, he's 317 area code.
I don't know. I look for the name. See, he comes in as a administrator, so he should be.
Yeah. No, he's
with
not
a
here.
Yellow phone there. Okay, so right. He's not here tonight. All right. Okay, so we'll move on to our next individual. Gerard, you got the mic. Go right ahead. I mean, you got the control. Go right ahead. It looks like we lost Crystal.
I got to unmute myself first.
Oh, good idea. Is that so people can hear you, maybe?
I didn't want you to hear that anyway.
Oh, okay.
It was better you didn't hear it. Anyway, we got California Jeremiah. Hang on. Let me unmute you first. You've been unmuted.
Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, not much. I'm going to run to my computer right now so I can access this information and statutes that bind the government here. 28 U.S.C. 1781, also federal rules of civil procedure, 28B, okay, and rule 4F2B, okay, and this is about issuance of letters rogatory by federal courts. And I was wondering, because of the federal nature or the collective nature of the group and the way you're coming as a common law, like grand jury, could you, you know, that's under the federal rules of civil procedure, you could, apply for a letter rogatory, you know, to, because the common law, see, it's a totally different jurisdiction than what's being applied in their, in those, vessels and dry dock. You know, you're like,
yeah,
you
don't
want
to
be treated like a vessel and dry dock.
We don't want to get into that conversation of vessel and
dry dock. We're not.
But let me,
it was
let
only
me tell
for
you
reference.
One thing,
yeah.
Though. We will use any statute that will benefit our case. And any statute, remember, most of these statutes, the 18, the 42, and numerous others, but particularly those two codes, bear in mind, most of that was written concerning people with authority and power, people that have
right.
the cloak of law around them, so to speak. They're supposed to represent
mm-hmm.
the law. They're supposed to be justices. And then they abuse that and they act under the color of law. They put their cape on saying, I am the law, and they enforce their own law and their own rules Okay, so we will use those rules. What I have found, and I'd love to do a paper on this. I just haven't got the time because there's a lot involved in this particular one. But the fact that in rem is used in cases of the law of the land, IRS uses it every case they're running. And as a matter of fact, any case that's a corporate case, in rem is used there. All of these foreclosures, whether they're non-judicial foreclosures, whether they're mortgage foreclosures or tax foreclosures, all of that is done in rem. Okay, it's all written and connected in the federal rules, court, and it's very strict the way they did it, because I picked it up on one, from studying and reading it, I picked something up that led me to see that they were taking this right from the law of the sea right into the law of the land. And I saw on a couple occasions that connection, and I realized they think that they're given power and authority to do this. Now, that's null and void. That's a violation of due process. It's null and void. And we're going to let it be known whenever that comes up that it's null and void. But I'd like to do a paper exposing that, because it's pretty slick the way they did it.
Well, what they're doing, right, is you made a good point earlier about the interpretation of statutes. It's not the common law if the provision comes from let's say the case decision comes from a statute or constitutional provision. It may not be the rule of court governing the local community, which is what we are representing here, as a common law grand jury. We're representing.
Yeah, but remember.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember this though. Every state case and anything lower than a state, whether they're
I just wanted to let you know I am with you on your diet.
This is for the edification of others too, because it's actually really being seen here in your conversation. Any case on a state level and below, all the way down to the village level, which those are all administrative courts anyway. You volunteer them. Proceed in those cases, but all of those cases, any decision they make and is written, and I'm talking even about the New York State Supreme Court, any decision they make concerning anything that affects our due process or any unalienable right is null and void. They don't have the power or the authority to make a decision in those areas. That has been reserved to Article III courts alone. That's their jurisdiction. So when there's a violation of a constitutional issue, they can't make a decision there. They can only be told what they need to do, and if they refuse to obey, you take it to the federal level, and then you bring it before a federal court. And, of course, you have to keep your jurisdiction, and you got to make sure we're focused in on due process and the cause. They will always try to throw you out of the federal court. Remember, you have to go in for cause, and cause is very simple to be met. Any constitutional violation, any violation of an individual's unalienable right is cause to go to.
Right. I agree. Justice delayed is justice denied. And I was thinking by going in friendlier, right, with a letter rogatory from, common law to the civil law authorities, okay, I believe that is an excellent way of addressing some constitutional violations without, putting everything out there in the open and potentially causing, upheaval or whatever. And go ahead.
Let me ask you something. A letter rogatory, I don't know anything about what that is. Can that be a group of people that come in that they don't say, well, you can't represent a group of people? Is that a methodology for a group
Absolutely.
Of people to come into the court and make and put redress? Because if it is, we can mention that. We don't have to do it. What we'll say is, even in your own system, not Article III courts, you have letters rogatory, which allows the people to represent themselves without an attorney. So as the common law sovereigns of the court, you can't deny us, right? I mean, I would shove that
right
down their throat, right?
True. I mean, but there's a standing issue to be representing common law. What we want to do is have our statuses all correct and acting as a group. We come in with the justice of the peace elected by every representative, and they act in the name of the group. Go ahead.
I don't know anything about that, but, something to think about or something to mention. I mean, look, we have a right to be there. There's no doubt in my mind. that they can't tell us that, you know, you can't bring this stuff up because you're not.
Well, here is their problem. This is their problem. When they open up any court case, they do it one of two ways. The people against or versus, or they do the United States against or versus. Well, who the heck is the people and who the heck is the United States? That's what we're coming in as. We're coming in as the true people of the United States of America. We're coming in as the people. And how could they possibly shut down a case coming in as the people? Then they got to shut down every case, and all cases they've ever done is null and void. And ultimately, at least many of the cases that I'm aware of is null and void all over the place because they don't give due process ever. And so they have no authority to go forward.
I want to lastly say this. There's absolutely... You're right. The due process isn't given because of this broad sweep of civil authority. But I want to shout out Charles Stewart, Charles 8854 on TalkShoe. He has constitutionalgov.us, where he talks about this justice of the peace and then acting, you know, for the local community and the organization, of course, of local townships from the, you know, from a to build a power base from the bottom up. And I think if you guys go to his website, you could find out more information, you know, about this. But there's also a TalkShoe call every Friday where you can join. And if you know TalkShoe's phone number, it's if you don't know it, it's 1-724-444-7444. So 724-444-7444. And then type in 10929. Okay, that's the activation code. And it's every Friday at 4 o'clock Western Time. And we talk about the constitutional form of government being addressed on this call. I yield the mic. Thank you, John.
You're welcome. Before we go any further, I just wanted to make note. I just was looking at the dismissed paper. They're trying to give us a reminder. And they're trying to ignore a writ of error. And yeah, Gerard, I think they are trying to move us into the appellate court. They're trying to get control here by moving. Of course, you have a right to appeal, you know. I mean, how do you appeal all these cases to begin with? And they don't even understand what we're doing. Maybe he does. Maybe that's part of their game is just playing stupid. But this is really a very simple paper. It's a reminder paper is what they're really trying to do. And we will respond to this tomorrow.
Right on. Hey, listen, one other thing. You know, a municipality is not necessarily a township and represents represents basically the de facto arm of the state that basically would cover the local community who doesn't step forward to claim the common law. So I think I like to think I'm pretty rational with my basis here. But thanks, guys. Have a good one. We'll look forward to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I agree. A municipality isn't necessarily a – look at the – Washington, D.C. has been called a municipality as they turned it into a state and a foreign country ultimately, at least in their fraud is what they did. But it's null and void. It's meaningless. It has no power, no authority. So, okay, Gerard.
Okay. Let me see. We'll go next question is William Harley.
Hey, how's everybody doing tonight? Can you hear me okay?
How you doing? Yeah, how you doing, William?
Yeah, as far as that interesting point about the person who sorts for sessions, I'm all about attacking their process. I heard something interesting about the sort of change under this administration's new guy. I'm going to be vague here, just leave it out there because I haven't researched it, but in just the way that they had impaneled people to sort the Supreme Court cases. And for whatever you think about the weight of a Supreme Court case, it means something to somebody, and there's, you know, gatekeeping, of course. And I think that happens at all courts, actually. And as far as the pools, I'd like to think that ideally it's one, you know, kind of a, you know, bingo game, and the ball comes up, and it's you take that case. But it's more like it's a, a schedule builder and, you know, a career builder. So they're going to pick and choose, too. You just pick who they are.
Yeah, but the bottom line in our case, just so you understand, though, the bottom line in our case, they've already picked and choosed. And this guy's not willing to do what this judge is doing. And that's why they got this guy coming in to do what everyone else should be afraid to do. But we're going to get this guy through the law. This looks pretty simple to deal with. Again, they're just trying to reiterate something, and they're really trying to move us into an appeal system where then we lose control of our court.
But I wouldn't be against FOIAing the process. Just let's find out what is it. You know, Mr. Sessions, you're a busy guy. I'm sure you do use different people for different kinds of things. What's that guy who sits there 9 to 5, you know, his criteria for picking who gets through the chute, so to speak?
Yeah,
but
Mr. Sessions
general,
is not talking to us, which we knew he would. Yeah. I knew he wouldn't. At least I believe.
This is why we pry open the process and we start to be a pain in the ass. And I would say it
well,
worked,
that's
would
why that's why that's why levels. We've been copying the president, and that's why we're going after the president now. The president needs to go and tell this man to bring justice back into the courts. We
again,
made our point
I
in
think,
the
I
case.
Think that's great
you can't
to say
make America great again
top.
if it's not just. America will never
I'm
be great
the
again
opposite,
if it's not
though, is I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm excited about this topic. Is like we could FOIA from right up underneath, like not the bottom, but you know close to the top, so that we're agitating the people who have a job to do and questioning how they do it and getting information. And even if we get rejections, that's a form of metadata. You know, it's like you say, well, there's lots of different ways to weigh these you know responses that they make. You know, stupidity in action, great to watch. But anyway, I'll cut this short. I just wanted to be a big cheerleader for people. Just, you know, go ahead and join. If you've been thinking about it, you've been thinking about, do I have time to do this or that, find a niche. I'm on a couple different committees. They're not all active at once. The one I'm on right now with the affidavit writing, I feel like it's really key. I just envision whole, like, church basements full of people writing affidavits and getting them notarized and straightening out a whole lot of things in a whole lot of communities because, you know, these things happen in groups. And the more we can get people with the skill to just lay it down, get it in the right format and work, get it in the pipeline, notarized, you're getting help along the way. You're getting some mileage right now, like John and everybody says. You know, file it locally and put it on notice that it's also been filed in this other case. And you know what I'm saying? So even if you die, eventually your heirs could pick up those affidavits and still win a case with it. So, again, we're just adding our part of kindling. It's overwhelming, I know, to see the whole thing. But pick up something. Join. Take the constitutional course. If you got time, take the civics course, too. Get these basic amendments and rights under your belt and know the precedents, and, you know, you'll be dangerous to them. If you're going to come into court, they're going to mess with you. You're going to come in and people are going to write out cheerleader thing for the night, and I'll check out.
Okay, appreciate it, Bill.
Okay, New York Michael. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, guys.
Hey.
With the courtroom observers, I've got a couple questions. A friend of mine called in, or he wrote in and texted, and he sent the application for courtroom observers here in Buffalo, New York, for Friday the 21st.
Okay.
And there hasn't been any response sent out to anybody for help for him.
Well, what they should do is get a hold of the committee chair. And there may be a few of those people, but you'll find them on the directory. But also look at just filling out a form. We should put on there, you know, to make contact with an individual. You got to get the contact going. Now, I don't know where they're at with that. I don't know if Robert's still on, if he can respond to what's going on with that particular paper. But it is true that sometimes we'll get requests for assistance and nobody shows up because we don't have anybody close in that area. And that's why everybody, we have over 6,000 members, everybody should be on an alert when there's a call to assist in a court case. And if they notice that it is in their area that they can attend, I mean, look, take an hour or two off of work to attend if you can. And but assist someone, because one day you may need help and there'll be people there to assist you. We have to help each other. But get a hold of Robert. Get a hold of whoever's chairing that. And I know we lost the original chair on that particular committee, and I think Robert is taking it on while they're looking for another one. So
I can talk to him on Wednesday night then at the call.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, they should come into the call. If they, anybody who is interested in assistance should be in on that call. Okay, definitely.
Right.
You know, if they're not interested enough to make that phone call and get in on that call, or even call the committee chair, which they have the phone number to, if they don't have enough interest in the case to do that, then, you know, how many people do they expect to have interest in their case also, you know?
I always
put it to people, I'm as interested in your case as you are. And often I find people, they want help, but then they don't do anything to help themselves. Maybe they think we're lawyers or something, you know, they tell us a story and then they think we're going to take care of it. And that's not how things work. We're here to train and teach and to assist, you know, as best
right.
we can. We know that it takes, you know, not anyone could just walk into a court and deal with it, because they're walking into an environment they have no understanding of unless they've been working at it. It takes time to work on it. So
right.
now we took a judiciary course. You know, I took it and Gerard took a judiciary course early on. And the guy that we took the course on was pretty good. It taught us how to write papers, okay? He was a little naive or ignorant in certain ways, or deceived, shall I say, because he seemed like a really nice guy and seemed like, you know, he explained things well. But bear in mind, it's just that course was just a course to learn how to write papers and the process of the court, you know. At some point, you got to come above what he's teaching to get to the common law side of things. But it is important to take a course to be able to write papers and understand how the court works and how the court thinks and how the judges think and how lawyers fight a battle and all that. All that is important to do. And we did put a book together trying to give people information. Now, when I did the jurisdictionary course, back then we had DVD. They gave us DVDs, and everything that this guy was teaching is on a DVD. Plus, we had updates that we were getting, and so you can go and update. I think that was Lifetime. But a couple of years ago, they moved that over to, I think it's $49 a month that you pay. I think you have to pay an initial, maybe it's $49 a year. I think you have to pay an initial $279 or something like that, and you have total access to the website. And then I think every year, and I have to look into this, I think every year you have to pay $49 to continue to have that access. And I think that's a pretty good deal. I recently made contact with them. They sent me an email, and I'm thinking, because the course was so good, that we may also put that on our website, and they have a plan for those people who want to share that. And, you know, you get a few dollars from the course every time someone signs up, and that'll help NLA on the one hand, and also assist people on how to write papers and so on in the middle. So I'm going to be looking into that maybe this week and try to get that up if we decide to go forward with that, so people have a place where they could really go and learn how to write papers and how the court works.
Right. I ordered that through the Power Hour with Joyce from Dr. Peter Graves. I've got that jurisdictionary course here, and
right.
I've used it before NLA, before I got involved with NLA. I used that quite often, and I won all the cases that I used it on, and it does teach you how to write good paperwork, and it's got affirmative defenses, and it's got a whole bunch of maxims of law. It's really good. Well, you know what's in there if you have it.
Oh, yeah. It is excellent. The only thing, we have to de-educate you in certain areas, and that's where our paperwork comes in, that you don't
right.
want to respond as they do. You want to respond as a sovereign individual, as one of the
right.
people.
And
you want to tie right. in some of the stuff that we got from Bill. Goodness,
Thornton.
What's Bill's last name again? Huh?
Thornton, Bill Thornton.
Bill Thornton, right. You know, we want to tie that in. The key thing is beginning, you know, in this court of record type thing. And he's got a lot of great ideas and things. A few areas we believe he's wrong in, you know, but remember, the king of the court is not you or me. It's ultimately God. God's the king of the court. Common law court, that's who the king is, God. We are the tribunal. We are the representatives of God sitting in as the tribunal because a court of record requires a jury. And they're going to make the decision on behalf of God, and we got to make that clear to these people when they become jurists that you're representing Christ. You're representing God, eternal God, the creator of this universe. And so you better be acting in a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. But, you know, I know in that letter that was written, they mentioned that I should take the Dr. Graves online class, and I have already done that. We've utilized a lot of the principles. We come to understand, you know, all of the necessary paperwork that's required to file a case. But bear in mind, the truth of the matter is you can get a piece of toilet paper and take a pencil and write your affidavit, get it notarized, and file it in the court. And that's all that's necessary to file a prima facie case, is to write an affidavit. Everything else is not necessary. Of course, it kind of is for a person that could learn that stuff and come in and do it properly and make the case clear on paper and lay out the law of the land, so to speak, or the common law. All of that is a necessary thing. But for an individual who has no background in any of this stuff, that's sufficient enough, affidavit.
Right. I did that when I was in jail. I used toilet paper. I did an affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. It was good. It was good. And pencil, no less. But anyway, on the Courtroom Observer's site, I don't know where to find the archives. I don't see them on there anywhere. The archives that...
Yeah.
And on Monday nights calls, there's nothing there listed for the observer nights.
Oh, I don't know that they're recording that. Jan, are they recording those?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether they're recording that. And they may record what they think is important and post what's important. I know sometimes they go off on discussions and stuff, and it may not. It'll be helpful to certain individuals involved in the discussion, but may not necessarily help others. I don't know. They figure that out, I guess. So whatever's going to be posted. You know, we post every Monday night meeting, so we know that gets posted. And there is a lot of other things that are posted. Talk to the committee, you know.
Right.
The chairman.
Okay. I'll talk to Robert on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, I yield. Thank you very much. God bless. Keep going.
Michael, thanks.
Oh, yes. Good night, John.
Okay, we have New Hampshire Joe is up next. He's been unmuted. Joe from New Hampshire. Say hello, Joe. It shows he's unmuted, but the check mark's still there, so I don't really know.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Thank
it's
you for taking my call.
Oh,
thank you for
hang
taking
on a
my
second.
Call.
Hang on a second, Joe. Yeah, if you notice when you hit the next question and the check mark's still there, if you look to the right, you'll see the little guy with the cartoon
talk
box
saw.
There.
Yeah.
That means he's actually unchecked. For some reason, it just doesn't turn up on your browser right away.
Right.
But go ahead, Joe.
I think I had it muted on my end, too. Thanks for taking my call, Mike. I had three questions on the paperwork that we discussed earlier. I'll try to just throw them out quickly. I guess our next step would have been the appellate court after the magistrate or the judge's decision. So that sort of got questioned. That got answered as we went along.
Absolutely not. There is no appeal. Look, in a court of record, you don't go to the appellate court. You sue directly. And we're going to make that clear to this judge. I don't know who he thinks he is. This is a court of record. We don't go to any court of appeals or appellate court. We sue you directly. And our decision is final. And the Supreme Court has made it clear that the decision of a court of record can't even be second-guessed by they themselves. United States common law, the United States, the U.S.
Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, yeah. The U.S. Supreme Court can't even second-guess a court of record. They made that clear.
Right, so I guess that's how we move forward. I was thinking that in my own case, I know that they used a magistrate sort of as a lower level judge to, give the, the blame to someone else that they could.
Yeah, well, they have
so they
have
delegate
their
that process.
Back. Yeah, they had their thinking backwards, though, because that's exactly...
I think they were looking for an objection. I think that they were looking for an objection, you know, to get us to operate into their jurisdiction, an objection to their idea that we needed to be represented by counsel. And I guess I mistakenly thought that that's what we would have had to take into the appellate court, that we would be, objecting to or appealing the necessity to be,
right. Well, that's,
to be represented. And I get that theory.
Their mistake is not reading our paperwork, because if they read our paperwork, they would understand all this clearly. And so by not reading our paperwork really puts them in a situation and trying to understand our paperwork where anything they do is going to be wrong. It's not going to work. And we're going to make it clear on the paper that there's no authority here. You can't make a decision. There's no such thing as a summary judgment in a court of record. You can't throw a court case out of a court of record. It must be heard. You know, the only one that's going to throw it out is the jury with an acquittal or, you know, a denial. That's it. And this is what these people don't want. They know it. They know it. But they don't want to know it. They don't want to hear it, and they don't want to understand it.
Right. Ultimately, I do believe that this federal court is just still a nisi prius court on some level, and I believe that we have to set a course at some point for the Supreme Court, because I think that's where we'll be headed ultimately if we want to have success. But that was my other question, and I also wanted to put a plug in for helping this Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, to save face somehow. I know we called for his resignation, but I do believe that this judge thinks he's operating correctly by us not filing some kind of objection to that magistrate saying that we needed to be represented by counsel as whatever organization
Jeff Sessions. You got the names wrong, though, but Sessions, of course, is the Attorney General. What's the name of this this judge? This judge is his name is Lawrence. Oh, no, it's not. It's Kahn. Yeah, Kahn,
and then the other guy was the Daniel J. Stewart. I get that, but we
right,
called, I believe, for a resignation in the letter for Sessions. Did I miss it? Maybe
no,
I misheard that.
Never,
but
we
didn't really call for it.
Yeah, we haven't called for it. We just wrote to the president to tell him that this guy's either got to do his job or resign. That's his decision. You know, do it right or resign.
Okay, I thought if I might go back and re-listen to the recording, I thought you had said asking Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign, but maybe I had heard that miscued and heard the maybe
it
was.
Yeah,
it
is
Kahn
close. What we said is very close to what you're saying, though. I can see how, you know, we're not really actually just asking for it, but that's his decision. He either has to do the just thing or resign. But you can get a copy up on our page, and you can get a copy of the indictment and the information to the president. Both of those.
Okay.
Right up
great.
On
thank
the
you very much.
Docket page. Okay. Anybody, by the way, anybody who wants to get into the queue, there's only a few people in the queue, *6 to get into the queue.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. We're back to Crystal Mack. Crystal, you've been unmuted. Huh. She must have got back in. Crystal, are you there? Maybe she never, I don't know, she went away and now she's back, but she's still not talking. She must have a computer problem. Going once.
Yeah, maybe Crystal, maybe you're muted on your side.
Well, she's definitely open here.
Yeah, well, she's open on our side, but maybe she's got a phone, she's got mute on, or maybe she's coming in through Skype and she's muted.
I don't know. Let me mute her and then unmute her. Let's see if that works. Yeah, see, she's not coming into the other side, so she's not.
Well, she's got to speak to get to the side.
Oh, is that what it is?
All right, well, there's only one other person behind her, so she can come back in again. And again, if anybody wants to come into the queue, we only got a couple of people there, *6 to get into the queue. Any questions or comments?
All right, I'm going
to... Otherwise, we're going to have to sit and listen to Gerard talk.
I got some good stories if you want to hear them.
There you go. Good bedtime stories, right?
Well, you know... What is it? It's 11 o'clock. We have an hour. Okay, we got I'm going to leave Crystal there. I'm going to unmute. Who's that? That's
just
Jeremiah again.
Yeah, just hit next question. You'll go to Jeremiah. And Crystal will have to come back in again.
Jeremiah, is there...
Before you hit that button.
Go ahead, Jeremiah. You're open.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Good. Let me know if you hear an echo or anything. Basically, I wanted to say I just found this Federal Magistrate Act of 1979. It's some article made, and it was kind of neat because when you guys started talking about magistrates, what kind of stood out to me was, administering legal affairs for incompetence and you know, being there as a in a state ex rel kind of mode, that's what magistrates do, I believe, and so because they have a duty to uphold the laws of the state, and so when I was looking even further at the definition of justice of the peace, I came up with the term magistrate in some case law, and it states that the term magistrate through popular usage includes the term justice of the peace. Okay, that's from Brown versus Reed. Okay, that case was in 1949. But the case that caught my attention, and you're going to love this, and I will close with this so you guys can respond, it is from 1907, New York, right? And it states that a justice of the peace is a constitutional officer under Constitution Article 6, Section 17, and is a town officer who can have no existence as a public officer independent of his town organization. And as a town officer, his powers and duties are limited to such as are given him by statute. Okay? A justice of the peace cannot try a case before a jury in an adjoining town where he has an office, okay, even by consent of the parties. Then it goes on further down here to state that the true conception indicated by the term justice of the peace as disclosed by our Constitution and statutes is that of an officer having both judicial and political functions. Judicial in that he holds a court and decides matters of litigation arising between parties. Political in that he is a member of the quarterly county court, okay, which is the governing agency or legislative body of the county. But that in performing all of the duties pertaining to these two functions, he is in the main dependent upon his civil district, which creates him, which must be his home, which he cannot remove from without forfeiture.
Well, remember,
of his
though,
office.
A magistrate can't make a court decision.
Well, we can address that, but it's just about over here, and it goes on to state that in which he represents in the county legislature or county court. Okay, the point being is this. By becoming a qualified elector under common law through public notice in your local community and then posting it on the website for National Liberty Alliance so everyone can witness who has made their public notice, okay, now you're going to be basically claiming common law, you know, township status, and basically you guys can do this election process and one of you can be this, you know, the justice of the peace to make, and then you do your rogatory letter from one judge to another from a different jurisdiction. It sounds logical, but I believe that with further investigation, we're going to see that it's possibly a remedy because you're going to become an in-state ex rel.
No, I don't think that would serve us well in any way. We're on a federal level to begin with. Magistrates, there's got to be an administrator of the court. If it was on a state level, a county level, it could be the sheriff, or the coroner, mm-hmm. Okay? And I would presume a federal coroner, of course, could be sit as a magistrate. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, a magistrate, a man or a woman with the name magistrate before their name. But remember, the Supreme Court has made it clear that all judges are magistrates. In other words, they serve two different roles. If they're in an equity case where the individuals choose to do a case without a jury and they let the judge make the decision, then they move into the appellate process if they need it, that's one thing. And so that requires a judge, not a magistrate or someone of the peace or anything, nothing.
Right.
It must be a judge.
I think you're actually right. You're right, John.
Yeah. And on the other side now, once you move into a common law, a court of record, okay, so it's court of law, that's the common law, court of law, once you move over there, anybody coming in to sit on that case has to act as a magistrate. Now, on a federal level, even the sheriff, I'm sure, could move in on that and take that role of the county where the crime was committed or the accused is being accused. So that sheriff can come in. Any judge can sit in as a magistrate. Of course, any magistrate can sit in as a magistrate. The coroner can sit in as a magistrate. And I'm sure there are others that I'm not aware of that could come in and sit as a magistrate. You know, that particular job just requires someone to keep things moving and do the administrative work and make the signature and the seal on the papers and move things along according to the will of the tribunal.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like we're on the same page here, just using different words. So thanks a lot for taking my call. But again, remember, I think my core point here is public notice through newspaper of your standing as a head of your household right there in your local community. Because the head of the household status is actually a common law. And when
first,
you do public notice and don't get rebuttals, now you have standing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, bear in mind that they're not gonna accept that. So you're gonna be met with a huge battle, and that's
what do you mean
battle.
Accept that? What do you mean by
well,
that?
Well, you wouldn't. An individual can't walk into a court and take that kind of control. They'll never accept that.
Right. I get what you're saying.
And we wouldn't want to try to even go that route because of the battle we're fighting. You know, the things are so
right.
Far
I'm not even
off.
Saying you. What I'm saying is you're not trying to go into the court with this piece of paper. This is merely for your records to have a paper trail of authority giving you standing. So if there's ever a question of your common law status, you just bring it up. Say, yep, yeah, it's in the record. It's right there. You got the paperwork, right? Yeah. Oh, okay. I see it. Okay, cool. No one rebutted that, huh? Oh, okay. I guess it is a common law.
Well, we do make that point in the very beginning of our case, and in every case we do have, on every paper we file, we generally have a note which brings us right into that fact and what jurisdiction we're in and the common law, and it's constant throughout all of our paperwork on the first page of every paper. So,
excellent.
Okay.
I need
anything
to do
else?
The same thing, though, but thanks a lot. Oh, that's it. That's it for now, and
okay.
Appreciate it. Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. We just lost our last caller. It was a person from New Mexico, I think it was. But
okay,
anybody has a question or a comment, feel free to hit *6 and get into the queue. Gerard?
I want to bring something up. This past week, we were talking to a fellow that knows Pete Hendricks. He wrote the book Cracking the Code. His wife went to jail after the IRS held her in jail under contempt in order to file a false W-4. And Pete did a stint in jail also for his book. They said it was an illegal tax, you know, dodge thing, but he since got out and he's out there writing and teaching some methodology. His students are having very good success. Anyway, he's up for an interview. He wants me to interview him, and Ollie will tape it. I meant to tell you that, John. And we'll ask him about some of his thoughts. He's very common law in his he's come around to common law after fighting with the IRS and understanding what their problem is and how they take people into this fiction. So I think it should be interesting. And I'm waiting to hear back from him. We're gonna do it, over Skype, and then Ollie will edit it, and then we'll go over it, and then maybe we can post it. But it should be a very interesting interview. So, and that's up and coming here, you know, in the next week or so, couple days. I haven't heard back from him which day he wants to do yet. So, Pete's got a big following, and he's He's worked a lot of stuff out the hard way, school of hard knocks, kind of like what we did. And it would be good. I think it would be good to support each other. You know. I think we're further together than we are apart in our strategy and our methods of operation, MOs. You know, so it would be good if he's got a following in his own right, and that would help boost us, and we could help boost him. I think maybe we should file a habeas corpus on his wife too, John. But we'll talk about that. You know, we get him. I told him to come to the site and look some stuff.
Yeah, if he's interested, we'll assist him.
Yeah, no, he didn't realize who we were, and so he's only had a brief look, but he liked what he saw, and I know him. I've had his books for years and years. He was one of the first books I bought, Cracking the Code. Also, Claire Wolf wrote the book, I Am Not a Number, and that type of stuff. That was all 25, 30 years ago, and that back, with the tax honesty movement and freedom to fascism and all those things that started this way back when. And Bob Schultz with his articles of freedom there, whatever you call them, and... So he goes back a long way. He was back there when people were just starting to wake up. Joe Bannister and Sherry Jackson Peel. And I see she's still around. She's been doing some talking too. Sherry Jackson Peel. She was the IRS agent that turned over and realized that there was no law on the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
So. Good, interesting stuff. These are people that, if we get together, they all have a following in their own right. And if we could bring them into common law, it would only help them, So, and that's why Pete's very interested in what we're doing, because he kind of got there by himself. But now we're going to brush him up on the finer things, So he doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. And he's got some pretty good stuff that's working pretty good, I know. Robert Schultz made up a paper to give to your employer to stop withholdings, and that's also what Pete does. Pete has you, when you're doing work and the insurance company sends a W-9 in, you use the IRS has a form that you fill out that basically says that this is a false information form, and please. It's not taxable income, because I don't fit that. It's their own form that's in there. So you fill it out and you rebut it, because if you don't rebut it, they'll use it against you. So you have to say that's not taxable income. That was a false information report. And they've been writing people checks, thousands of dollar checks. And so obviously it works. And of course, that's why they went after him. Because they can't answer and they can't rebut. The way he does it, they're in a pickle. Because he absolutely puts their feet to the fire. And ultimately, you got to know with the IRS, you're volunteering in. And once you volunteer in, then they can hold you to the full faith and credit and everything else of their rules and regulations. So one of the things that you need to do is to remove those things that are making you a taxpayer, such as a W-4, W-2, W-9, 1099, all those things that they use to show and assume that you're a taxpayer. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, we got New Mexico James back, so I'm going to go ahead and open him up.
Yeah, are you guys familiar with Congressman Bob Barr?
Bob Barr, name's familiar, but I don't know why.
All right, you might want to think about sending him some of these. He was on Friday. He was also on Alex Jones, and he was specifically talking about the Bundys and how they've been locked up and haven't, been able to bail out. And he sounds like he's got his head in the right place on the subject matter, so.
Where is he from, do you know?
I'm looking at him right now. He's from Georgia, 7th District, it says.
Okay.
Oh, wait. No. That's why I looked it up, see if he was still active. He's not. It's 95 to 2003. And so what power and pull he has, but he's definitely a good spokesman for the right thing, the right causes. So.
What was he, a congressman?
He was a congressman in Georgia.
Okay.
And,
yeah, well, he has connections. He has some clout, and if he's walking the walk, you know, that's doing the talk. That's good.
Yeah. Well, he was saying the right things.
Right.
Other than that, today I was thinking about Joe Robertson up there, and I was actually trying to figure out, from what I knew of his case, he had dug a hole in the ground for a pond and then got in a bunch of trouble with the EPA for polluting downstream. And I was wondering, you know, I just started thinking about, are people just not that good at protecting themselves sometimes? Because it's like you dig a hole in the ground, you fill it with water and it rains and then some of it goes off. Well, some of it's going to go off when it rains all the time, you know, and so I was just trying to figure out how in the world did they possibly prosecute him.
Bear in mind, though, it's the silt that causes the problem and does a clog up. So, of course, anybody that does any kind of digging needs to, you know, put up hay bales or silt fences and protect the whatever water flows off your property. And I'm sure he probably did that, too. But nevertheless, his water never directly went into any of the tributes. What do they call it, the tributaries?
They're 60 miles away to the nearest waterway that they could convict him on. It's amazing.
Right.
To put up,
so the whole thing. But not only was the whole thing a fraud from the judiciary and the prosecution side and all that stuff, on top of that, look at even if you did something like that, what's involved here, it's a code violation, which at most is a fine. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to jail. That's ridiculous.
Not to mention that he had all the state permits. The state EPA, he got the bill.
Well, then you know he had hay bales up.
You're right, Gerard. That's right. I remember that. And so how,
yeah,
you know,
all, it's all bull crap. Somebody wants his property. Somebody wants something. Maybe he's sitting on some uranium or something else. I'm telling you, he's targeted because of something that's over there. It's got nothing to do with pollution. That's all baloney, you know. And like I said, he has the state permits, which should, you know, that should trump the whole thing right there. What are you telling me? The state permits aren't as high as what the federal are? The local guys?
Put them in prison, not me. They're the ones that said I could do it, you know?
Exactly. So, you know.
Yeah,
that,
and so there I wonder, you know. Yeah.
That's
I wonder,
right
you
there.
Yeah, I know he's 10 years older than me. He's like 75, and it gets tough as you get older, you know, just having energy to defend your rights if they, you know, the gorilla puts pressure on you. So on to the Mr. Guard, I believe it is, almost like your name, Gerard, but the Amish fella, and there was a guy over in North Carolina who was going to go there that seemed real interested in helping him out. Has anybody heard anything on how his case is going?
I
think it's Guard is how you pronounce his last name.
Gerard, right. There was a bunch of people rallying. Who was it? There was an official that brought his case up to the White House, I think. I heard
Did
recently.
They? So maybe President Trump has seen it. Okay.
What was going on there with it?
If I was president, I would just pardon these people instantly, you know, against all odds. I'd say we don't need to be wasting people's tax dollars prosecuting holes in the ground and stuff like that. So, or in the Amish man's, you know, his salves that he's making to help people.
Well, if
it's
they were
ridiculous.
Gonna pardon somebody, if they were going to pardon him, they'd have to pardon Joe first. Joe's case is so out of the box, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, I don't know. This Amish guy, he did a couple of stupid things that got him in trouble. He pissed him off, and so then they targeted him. Because,
he
was selling across state lines, and he didn't have any licenses, and his facilities weren't inspected. So You can only go so far with that stuff. Because, look, if you're not doing what the average person has to do in order to do commerce, the government's mm-hmm. going to crack down on you. So, I mean, from what I can tell by reading the case, I mean, even though they did come in and say, you need to do this, this, and that, and he did change some stuff and change his labeling, but they went after him anyway. See, that's where it should have ended. What they should have, when they first went after him and said, you can't do this, and you got to have your kitchen inspected and all this other stuff, and then he was making the changes, they should have left him alone because that satisfies the job that we, the people, put them there for. You know what I mean? We do want safe stuff. We don't want to make sure that you're mixing stuff in a kitchen that I'm not going to get staph infection from your fab because you're practicing doing good practices and there's some kind of an assurance, you know what I mean? Because the minute mm-hmm. somebody gets sick, they go, oh, there ought to be a law. Where's the government? How come I wasn't protected? Blah, 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 you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's got to be worse to do the minimum things that the average person has to do commerce. Now, look at If you're making stuff in the family and in the community and people are using it, the government should have nothing to do with that. If you're of your own free will going to this guy, it's just like drinking unpasteurized milk. It's not like you're putting it on ShopRite's shelf. You're selling it to people that are coming to you for it that are full well doing it with full knowledge of what they're doing. You see,
I hadn't heard that he was not agreeing with those rules. So I wish.
Well,
the man
he gave
luck.
Them Trump when they first came in. He kicked them off the farm, and he was hard nosed with them. So that right away they got a bad taste in their mouth. And you see, and I'm not talking against him, but just from my own experience, you always want to start off with honey. You get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. And as much as I can't stand the government,
who the heck wants a fly?
Well, if you're a frog, you love them. So, you try to baffle them with the bull crap and the fancy footwork, before you hard nose them. You know, I mean, that's what I would do. I wouldn't right away jump up and make myself, I'm going to fight you or whatever because.
Yeah, well, the government was all within its rights to do what they did, but they went to the extreme, of course. They should have, once the guy started to comply, they just should have worked with him, helped him get along, do things right, and leave him alone. Of course, if they wanted to give him a little fine, if they had that authority, then they would give him a fine if they had that authority. And again, it's got to be all legislated, and that power we, the people, gave to the legislators for commerce, and this falls within that criteria. But the violation against this man came is when he started to comply and they came and beat him up after that.
And you know what the other problem is? I don't know for sure, but I kind of feel that it probably is. He was having people give testimonials that he was having success curing skin cancer. And let me tell you what, they're never going to let that go. That's probably the thing that really got him because the AMA and the Cancer Society and all these people, they're evil, and it's a multi-billion dollar business, and they're not going to let anybody cure anything naturally, And so he was making some of those claims, and he had people who were giving testimonials to the fact that they were able to cure themselves. So that was probably the nail in his coffin right there, and probably everything else was just, baloney to get him into jail, just the icing on the cake. That's a very powerful lobby there, Okay.
Yeah, the government definitely, state and federal, has tremendous powers given to them under commerce clauses. So.
Yeah, you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be able to do the fancy footwork to or just keep it small, stay in the community.
If Fred is still listening out of California, it was Nixon in office for 1 year when the Kent State, we were talking about that where the program started, just to mention that. So,
okay,
that
so
was May,
there,
May,
here,
May.
So, okay, anything else, James?
No, sir.
Okay, very good. I will go to the next question, which is T. Culpepper. You've been unmuted.
Hi, Gerard. Hi, Terry. Hi, Gerard. Yep. Hi, Terry in New Jersey.
Yes.
Okay. There's an article came out today in the CIA's. I'm hearing a lot of feedback. CIA's paper of record, the Washington Post, it says Jeff Sessions wants police to take more cash from American citizens. There's a couple of lines in here just to bring you up to speed. It says here, Sessions said in his prepared remarks for a speech to the National District Attorneys Association, Minneapolis, with care, quote, with care and professionalism, we plan to develop policies to increase forfeitures. No criminal should be allowed to keep the proceeds of their crime. Adoptive forfeitures are appropriate, as is sharing with our partners. So, you know, I know we talked about this a few months ago when the Sheriff's Association was trying to brainwash Trump into giving them more power. And the NLA was supposed to send a paper or something with regard to this issue.
When did he make that statement? Is that recent or is this older?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
This statement, this prepared statement.
Oh, this article is today.
So this is something recent he did. I'll tell you, when he said that group of sheriffs went, you know, to Donald Trump and Sessions agreed, you know, that there should be more forfeiture, there was a public outcry. Matter of fact, what's his name? Alex Jones said, that's bad. We got to go after him. And so I thought he was maybe going to change his tune. But if that's what he's saying, then he's still on the same role.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This guy is tone deaf or something. The people don't want this bullshit.
You know, he doesn't.
You
he
know,
doesn't
the problem.
Yeah,
you know, the problem really stems on the other side that I don't think the president realizes or understands. Jeff Sessions probably does, but I don't know. Maybe we got to give him the benefit of the doubt, too. When someone stopped on a highway and they got a lot of cash, okay, all of a sudden they're held as if they're some kind of a drug dealer, okay? I've heard so many stories. I remember 2020 did a story on this a long time, 20 years ago, And so what they do is they seize the money as evidence. Well, evidence for what? There's no evidence of a crime. And then, of course, the person has no way. There is no trial. There's no due process. And they forfeit their money. And that's what they're talking about. But the president doesn't understand that. You know, we have to get a list of cases where these kind of things are happening. I remember the case in 2020. They were covering a contractor who was heading down south to an auction. And, you know, when you go to an auction, you have to have certified checks or cash. And they got to be absolutely 100%. And this contractor had a couple of $100,000 on him going down to an auction. He was stopped by the police. Okay, his car was searched. He had nothing to hide. They found the money. And they held him as a suspect of a drug dealer. And they took his money. And this was going on for years, I believe, if I recall, when the story was being told by 2020. This guy never got his money back. At least years later, he still hadn't got his money back. I mean, who are these people that they think they can do these things? Now, of course, if you stop somebody and something happens and you have the right, if the police officer has due cause, good cause, and discovers that they're transporting drugs and there's large sums of money, or drug dealing is going on out of a house which is owned by the drug dealer itself, or something like that, of course it's understandable you seize the properties. But the property has to be released if the individual is found innocent. There still has to be a trial. There has to be due process. You have to find them guilty. And then, of course, it's understandable. But the next question becomes is, what are they doing with that money? Because that's the other problem. We don't even know where they're probably going into, their own pockets for, I know they have all these kind of things for retirement plans and additional things, and on the town levels and the village levels and the city levels, and I'm sure probably something like that on the state levels too. But the whole thing, okay, is a sham. It's just stealing from the people. But that is what the president, I don't think, understands. See, that's part of the story they're not getting.
Well, the key sentence here is adoptive forfeitures are appropriate, as is sharing with our partners. who the hell are their partners, you know?
Well, yeah, therein is the game. Well, the court's got to get their piece. The judges need to get their piece. You know, all this, and I'm sure they got a whole list of different parties.
The state and the federal government, too. That's
yeah,
right.
There it goes. Yeah, they got to get their piece. Look, this is RICO on steroids is what it is.
Look, they fund their, the local guys
highway
fund
robbery.
They make it, you know, even if they steal a couple $1,000s, they make it so that, you know, it's not even worth going to court to get the money back. That's the whole thing. And, you know, that's the game plan.
Well, look, I know of this one story with this contract I was talking about. They just stonewalled the guy. His court case never came up. It's just that these things are pending, and that was their answer, and then they just stopped answering them altogether. They kept his money. I know when the story came out, the 2020 did it, when that story came out, it was years had gone by. This guy still hadn't got his money. And even after the court case, they never did an update where, hey, the guy, not going to court, but after the story was done, there was no follow-up story saying this guy got his money or anything like that I was aware of. But again, it's highway robbery is what it is. You know, they don't like you to carry large sums of cash, okay? They just don't want you to have large sums of cash. They want you to have digits in the bank because that's a problem for them. You know, I think that there's only enough cash out there to really cover itself in a total collapse, and there's very minimum. Of course, it's all digits in the bank. We write checks. We use debit cards and credit cards. Cash very rarely flows. Okay, and the amount of cash that is out there in a collapsed society, I think that cash may have its full value at that point in time. You know, if you got $100 bills or $50 bills or 10 or 20 or even one. Of course, the most powerful, of course, in a collapsed economy is the silver and gold. But I think those dollars might have some value, some good value still, because there's so little of it running around. And that's why they don't want people saving cash in a box under their bed or something.
You can't get more than a few thousand dollars out of the bank when you go to try to withdraw something.
Yeah, it's been a while since I tried to draw lots of money, but a couple of years ago and a long time before that, I was always pulling $8,000, $9,000 a week out of the bank, you know, covering payroll because I pay payroll in cash, and I did my savings in cash. I wouldn't put my money in a bank.
No, they'll only limit you to maybe $3,000 to $6,000 now at one time.
Yeah, like I said, I don't have a lot of money to draw, so I haven't done it in a while.
You wish
I wouldn't
you had that
doubt it.
I said you wish you had that problem.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. But they report everything now. If it's $250, they're reporting to the Federal Reserve. And that's another thing that we need to nip in the butt. Look, if they got these bank tellers and they're telling them, any suspicious activity or anything like this, and you got to report this and that, and you're not allowed to tell and this and that. These tellers are sending reports to the Federal Reserve, who is no more federal than Federal Express. And
it's even worse than that. Because the last case that I had a problem, which was a couple of years ago when I had to go and sue everybody, and I sued the bank and everything else. One of the things that I discovered when I was doing my research to sue the bank, I discovered that every bank is required to have one individual working in that bank doing nothing but looking at accounts, looking for inconsistencies, reporting large sums of money. There was literally a spy in the bank paid for by the bank itself in order to report to the federal government on what's going on in that bank and different accounts and large amounts of money is being moved and so on and so forth.
That person makes, they should be sued for because it's a false report.
That's right. That's right.
And they're color of law. And so what they're doing is they're spying for this agency that's not even federal. And Greenspan even said himself, we don't listen to the government. Nobody tells us what to do. Well, guess what? We don't have to listen to them either. It works both
there
ways.
There is an act out there called the Safe Harbor Act, and I found that in my research when I was doing this, which is a statutory, you know, it's an act. It's written in statutes, particularly dealing with this problem. In other words, that individual in that bank that is hired by the bank, required by the Federal Reserve, I guess, in order to send that information and spend all their time looking for inconsistency. That very thing is illegal according to the Safe Harbor Act. So even their own statutes are up against it. But they do it anyway because they make their rules up and they do what they want.
Yeah. Well, I bet you nobody's been filing that stuff against the different bank people. You know what I mean? How many cases actually go in? The average person doesn't even realize what they're doing to them.
Well, look, the lawyer's not going to go there and people don't know about it.
Right. Okay, anything else there, Terry?
No, that's it.
Okay, we'll go to California Fred's back in the queue. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, Gerard. I wanted to chime in one more time on Crystal. Crystal does not have a computer, and her check was delayed. She's out in the Midwest somewhere. She has to communicate by telephone, and she
isn't Crystal in Connecticut? Maybe it's a different Crystal.
Yes.
No, she's in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Okay. I told her about the writ of error, and she told me just before we had our 9 o'clock meeting that she had filed it and she wanted to get it notarized. And she said they were running around like chickens with their heads cut off and they refused to notarize her writ of error. I told her that another thing I thought she might want to try is to go down to the county and file a les pendes on her property, because that could put a crowbar in the gears of auction.
Yeah, we can give her a form on that if she wants, because we were going to do les pendens on that. But look at filing the going down to the county and filing it with the real property, that the court case, attaching it to the property, shows that there is a court case happening. Also, filing it with the court clerk, okay, puts the judge on a stronger notice. Because remember, we when we do this for people, we go after the judge, so the judge already knows. He already knows. But getting it into the record is something that the individual might want to do. So getting it filed into the county clerk next to the property, no one will buy the property. They can't sell, move. They can't change the – once you do that, look at the game that these people play is they like to change the names on the property during the process of while they're fighting with you. They're already working in the background changing there's a process that they use to change the names on the title. And so that's what they're busy doing. That would prevent that from happening, because that would show an open court case on that property, and they wouldn't be able to go forward. They could do a list pendants on that, which we do have a form for that. But I think filing the actual case is probably good, because we write papers specifically for this case with their name on it and so on and so forth in a federal court, and it's moved there for cause. The other thing, of course, is again, as I mentioned, making sure it gets filed in the court itself, to go to the clerk. Those are the two places.
Well,
and maybe even get a copy, even get a copy to the sheriff to let them know, hey, you know, there's a federal case going on this.
That's exactly what I told her. But
that'll do it.
I wanted her to interface with you guys about it, because I'm not really sure. You know, I'm no legal beagle. And I know you have history with her.
Yeah, I know she was trying to get in the queue three times, but I don't know, she wasn't able to speak or something. So
I think she's got battery problems. Yes, sir.
Fred.
Yes,
Gerard. When she was trying to get that thing notarized and signed, was she trying to serve it on the court, or was she just trying to notarize her signature? I mean,
well,
I think she was doing a writ of error on that, right?
Right, it was a writ of error, and she wanted it notarized, but she didn't have to go to the court to do that.
Yeah, she doesn't need to get it notarized anyway. If you're going to do a writ error, the best way to do a writ of error from a personal individual is to get yourself your own seal, which you can get that in 3 days from any Staples or Home, you know, or what do you call it, the other one, the Depot, Office Depot, and many other places. You can buy them online. Get yourself a seal, and the seal should be a court of record seal. It should have a date on it and your name, and then when you file those papers, you put your seal on it. Okay, that's as good as anything else, you know. Well, all of our founding father, or most of them anyway, Jefferson had his own seal. A lot of people have their own seal. Whenever
right,
I go
well,
to court, file papers, I always put my seal on it.
I really don't know what she was trying to do, because at that specific point in time, she had to go somewhere and do something. I told her, just go ahead and do it, because the meeting's going to start any minute. And then I started a conversation with another gentleman about Nixon what was going on way
right.
back then. You know?
Yeah, well, we tried to get her in three times, and three times she wasn't there, so we thought maybe she was away from a phone, or she couldn't talk, or muted, or something. I don't know.
That is why I chimed in, so that at least it would be on the recording that we attempted to cover what
right.
I brought up with her. So I hope that that's done. I'm trying
okay.
to be a good steward, that's all.
Appreciate
you know,
it.
You know, the other thing that's going on out there is they're telling these notaries, if they see something that's out of the ordinary or, you know, looks common law, to not notarize it, because what they're telling them is you're giving credibility to this unlawful paperwork by putting your stamp on it. It's giving it more credibility. So now they've got the clerk in a position of where she's going to evaluate the paperwork that you're bringing in, which she's absolutely not supposed to do.
Right.
Sure.
If it's someone that's working for the government, yeah, they because I've seen this problem in the county buildings and everything. But generally speaking, like you said, you know, you go out to another notary, to a bank or something, they don't know anything about. They can't get to all of them.
Well, no way.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would just get them to notarize it. The only thing is if you go to serve a writ of error at the court or in the county clerk's office, they may not take it. But you know, it's easy. What I would do with that is I would just go to the sheriff and pay him $35 and let him serve them.
Look, you serve it by mail, certified, and if you're really concerned about it, you have someone else do it and write an affidavit of service for it.
That's
and they saw it go into the envelope, and they personally took it down to the post office and put it in the mail. So now you have it certified, you have your own seal and signature on it. It's just as good as anything else.
Well, you can never let them stop. Because they think
that
people are going to stop us.
This gentleman that was covering the courtroom observers, he went into a big spiel about affidavits and using the notary to actually verify what goes into the envelope. And by the notary mailing it as a third party. And
right, we've heard of that, yeah. That's a process to be used. But look, it's a process to be used, but it does not really, if you want to do that, that's fine. But again, what I just told you, anybody over 18 can do an affidavit of service. And once you have the paperwork that this sworn affidavit from this guy, an affidavit of service that he put it in the mail, he or she put it in the mail, they're over 18, they're not part of the case. And then also do it by certified, so you got the signature on the other end, case closed. It's just as good
but
as anything else.
That only attests to the envelope and not the content.
No, that's not true, because you write it down right into the affidavit of service. I, so on and so forth, over 18, not part of this case, blah, 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 personally saw, and they list the things that's on there that went into this envelope and sealed, and it was personally given to me, and I took it down and put it into the post office. End of subject. A sworn affidavit from that any individual, it's over.
That's one of the defenses he uses against an attorney that has filed some paperwork and mailed it out certified mail. is that there's no way to certify what was in the letter.
Right, but the person who is filing it can say, can you look at when I do a service, you know, an affidavit of service, I list everything that's inside that paper, inside that envelope, and how many pages and whatever the titles are, okay? And then the person, and it's written up in such a way that the person saw that go into the envelope, or he or she put it into the envelope, but he saw it go into the envelope, and he personally took it and delivered it into the post office for service. And then you still get your certified, your mail, so you got the signature on the other end. Case closed. It can never go wrong. That's the process of the court. It's accepted. It's used every day for 100 years.
Thank you very much for spelling all of that out. You've cleared a lot of it up for me, because yeah. I was wondering. I was in a quagmire of listening to one opinion and then getting another opinion, and somehow.
Well, you have to have the proper language. That's the key. You know, if they don't have the proper language, that's the key.
And there's another twist to this too. The attorneys are considered officers of the court, and what they send in is considered true and correct, and they don't need to certify anything because they're officers of the court. You know that, right? They don't have to have anything notarized. If they send it to you, they're part of the case, it's assumed true. Right, John?
That's true. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Also, constables and police are considered officers of the court, too.
Right. The sheriff can serve. That's what Gerard says. Use the sheriff to serve it. And again, you want to detail what's in the envelope, and you still want to put that inside the envelope in the presence of that sheriff, you know, a deputy or a clerk or whoever you're handing it over to. For the purpose of service. But again, look, why make it so difficult? You do it very simple. You just get a friend or a family member that's not connected to the case and have them do an affidavit of service, make sure it's listing out what's went in there and that they saw it go in. It's that simple. I mean, you could still do it with the notary, and then you can have the notary put it into the envelope and take it and actually mail it for you and so on. You could do all that if you want, but that very few notaries will get involved that far, I think. I really don't know. I'm presuming.
We need to set up a notary service with our different committees of safety and correspondence.
Yeah, it's too difficult to get. We spoke. You look at it. All of us should become notaries anyway. But I'm not one, but I should find the time to become one. We all should. It's got some benefits to it. And, you know, we have a friend up here that's a notary that can notarize for us. But my bank's right down the road. I run down the bank. I get anything notarized I want. And again, you know, I'll use my son or a friend to put things in the paper if it's something that I, you know, doing an affidavit of service on. Again, it's so simple. Why even go beyond that? I mean,
I don't want to. John, please, I don't want to beat a dead horse.
We certainly are beating this horse.
I just wanted to cover this for Crystal in case she's listening or she can hear the recording.
Right,
so I'll mute out now. Thank you for your time, sir. You too, Gerard.
Well, thank you, Fred. Hey, there's another thing with notaries. There's something with notaries that if you're a notary, you can't do a certain thing in a court. That was another problem we ran into when we were thinking of becoming notaries. Something about...
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was some little statute there, so I don't know. I would look into
maybe that's
that.
Crystal coming up. It's a 203 number.
Well, I'll unmute her. Fred's done. We got a few minutes yet, so let me see if it's her. 203, you are unmuted. Go ahead. 203. Is that you? Crystal?
0117.
It
phone
must
number.
Be her. She's not
out of
talking.
Connecticut. 0117.
Well, it must be. She must have a problem with her.
She was
her
muted phone. Still. I just unmuted her.
Oh.
Can you hear us, Crystal?
Is that Crystal?
Well, we don't know. It's a 203 number, though.
No. Her number is 1111 ending.
Oh, okay. So it's somebody else.
I don't know who
else
that one is. No response.
Unmute yourself. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Yeah, that's that Crystal's there now. Go
that's
ahead.
Crystal, yeah.
Yeah. I went to the court as of today to respond because I got another letter because they never respond on that right to Vera. So I put the second request down on there. And I said, I also want to have notice after, you know, I want them to sign it. And they were going off today. They were running like you wouldn't believe going into court today. I asked for the deputy sheriff. I said, you know, and I said, I want these put into my file. So I said, here's the second request, and here's the first one that I gave you, which they did not respond. So I did a second one today, you know, so I got those copies, and I have them in my habit. And I gave
them
to the court. I'm sorry.
So they did stamp it for you, though.
They took it. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
But I wrote second request, and I wrote, gave the copy because they stamped it on June 6th. So I wrote the that date, and I said, see, June 6th, and I said, today is the 17th. So, and basically that's it, so I'll get those over there.
What was that? That was your written error, Crystal?
Yes, I did that. It also has been on TV. It was on TV about locally about them taking the habitat of me from the veterans. So it's a big mess going on up here about that, too, the illegal foreclosures. So Senator Richard Bloom was involved with that, you know, which everybody's been screaming about the illegal foreclosures, so...
Yeah, well, it's about time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been listening. I know California Fred was in here asking a lot of questions on your behalf, I think, of things that you were figuring or trying to figure out how to do certain things. But anyway, we do have it. If you listen to this audio later, if you haven't been listening all night, have you been on and off? Because we had trouble trying to get you.
Yeah, I fell asleep. I have fallen asleep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's late here on the East Coast.
You sound like me.
Yeah.
Well, you can go back and listen, Crystal, because your name was all over the place. We were talking about you. All good stuff, though. Some good stuff came out of, you know, Fred was talking to you before the meeting, so he brought up a lot of what you had said. And we answered that, so feel free to go back. And that was towards the end here. I mean, so you could go to the end of the tape and hear some of the stuff that we discussed that might help you. I don't know. Okay?
Well, as I said, they were all very nervous today, and they took my papers and they disappeared. I mean, I'm like, what's going on here? I even saw the judges behind the counters today. It's like something was going on. You know?
We're calling Homeland Security. We got a live one.
Okay. But that was it.
But you got your paper in, and they didn't stymie you, so let's see what happens. I mean, you know, look, at that's one of the things
also file the paperwork that we gave you, that we filed on your behalf. Filed that with the county clerk. We spoke about this when Fred was on talking about the stuff for you. But you want to file it with the county clerk over at the real property area. So it's connected to your property that there is a court case attached. That will prevent the changing, because they like to play this magic game of changing ownership while they're doing this process on you. Because lo and behold, one day all of a sudden you look and your name's not on there. Someone else's is. And they did it all illegal while they were going through this process. But you could prevent that from happening by filing that paper, and that would prevent that property, once it's searched out, to change hands, that they'll stop because there's a court case pending it. The other thing is to make sure, which I'm sure you've already done, is to make sure you filed it with the court clerk We served the judge, so the judge has it, but you have to file it with the court clerk. I believe we've done a non-foreclosure for you, didn't we?
I guess I...
If it's the old one we wrote for the sheriff, that was something else we were doing. Right now we're doing the non-foreclosures directly. Now that I think about it, I don't recall seeing your name on the list of what we're doing now.
All right, I'll get back on it. I think I had to...
I think we have...
Sorry.
We did file one for a crystal? Yeah, let me
I
can take a quick look. Yeah, I don't think we did either. But let's see. Yeah, I don't see one for you, Crystal. And we have a really good one which the judge will default on.
Okay.
And also Mr. GM, MG, what's his name? Mr. GM. General
Mr.
Motors,
G,
right?
G Federal.
Oh, GE, GE.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean we'll serve him and we'll serve the court, the judge, and then then once they're going to default it, and then we'll do a default paper, and now we're going to be doing behind that a show cause, but we're going to be pressing the magistrate in the court to sign the papers for the default. Then you could file that in the court and with the sheriff for execution.
Okay. All right. We'll get those over there.
All right.
All righty.
All right. Thanks a lot, Crystal.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. There's still a Connecticut number out there, Gerard. I don't know if they're 0117. Did we lose Gerard, too?
Yeah, my Skype, I got it dropped. I just got back in.
Okay. Anyway, you got this 203 number. I don't know if they've been unmuted.
You know.
If not, there's someone from Florida beyond.
That 203 number was Crystal.
No, it was not. Crystal was unmuted outside of the big list. Jan muted her.
Little do I know. That one's been unmuted the whole time she was on.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody's on there. Hey, John, when we file a default in the court, why can't we just go to the clerk and have the clerk give us the default? It doesn't have to be the judge.
Well, we could, but because of what we're doing, we want the administrator of the court to put the signature on there.
Right.
We're not messing around with the clerk. That magistrate needs to sign it, and we're gonna press him on that now. That he's our next target. And I hope he's listening in, because we're coming.
Okay. Well, we got Felicia from Florida. I guess I'll open her up. We only got a few minutes, so let me move it, because I don't know who's on the other line and not talking. Go ahead, Felicia.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, I submitted my questions via email because my call kept getting dropped, Mr. Jen.
What was your question?
Is the IRS illegal?
The IRS is not illegal. The IRS plays a game.
Well, everything they do is illegal and a fraud, though.
Well, no, but here's the deal. When the 16th Amendment was supposedly ratified, and that's questionable, I don't know if it was Congress or the judiciary said it conferred no new...
That was the United States Supreme Court said that.
Supreme Court said that it didn't confer any new taxation. So what it is the way it's written is constitutional. You see, you consent into it, and by consenting into it, then they hold your feet to the fire. So
yeah, but what they were really talking about was the definition of income, okay, and that it didn't change anything. Nothing has changed, and you know, you and I and we don't have income.
Well, they have a presumption that we do, and if you don't rebut,
that's the game they play. Yeah,
and of course, you know, if you're going in with W-2s and 1099s, what you're saying is, this is income.
Let me tell you, anybody that is dealing with the IRS, you need to get in court and take them to court before they take you to court. Now, you don't want to do that prematurely. You'll know because they will tell you Matter of fact, the last time they did it to me, they came knocking on my door and they said, hey, you give us our money, or in 7 days, we're going to file that. And I said, thank you very much. And then I sued them all, including my bank and the sheriff. It froze everybody up. They couldn't do nothing. And that's the key. You got to freeze everything up, and you got to make them the defendants. And then you got to have the right things. You know, one of the facts is that in Title 26, it says that Title 26 is not law. Okay, so that's one thing you got to bring up to them. But there's other things. The key thing you beat them up with is REM. They don't have the power and authority to deal with you in the power of REM. That's the key. And so therefore, they have to have proof. But even if they were coming out, you remember, look at REM is a process filed going after the property and not the individual. But even if you seize a ship at sea, for instance, the government seizes a ship at sea. When they bring it into the docks, they have to file two pieces of paper on it. One is fiduciary authority, and the other one is proof of claim. Okay? They tell their story. It's like an affidavit. They tell their story, what happened at sea and how they seized this ship, and they're taking fiduciary authority over it, and they don't have to serve the person. They just file these papers. Same thing with an individual. When they come out after you in REM, even in that process, they still have to file those two papers. Is the form 4490, and what's the other one? I forget the number on the other one, goodness. But anyway, there are two forms, and they're not there. They'll be filed down in the federal courts, and if they're not there, that's what you wave in your hand to the judge. Hey, they're not in there. What's going on here? And that judge is going to throw that case out, but he's going to do it very slick. He'll have them just, you know, retract themselves from the case and give you a forgiveness letter or whatever, you know. But look at if you don't get on top of the case when you're going up after the IRS, if you don't get them into court first, they're coming at you in a criminal case with power and authority. Even though they don't have it, it appears as if they do. They come under the color of law. So, you know, you have to get to them first. You have to get into the court first. It's that simple. The other thing is they've written into the rules of the court that once they, I forget what it is, yeah. Once you appear before the court, you only have 15 or 20 days to challenge this. And if you don't challenge their authority with, the two forms required to file, that you forfeit any argument using that, which again is unconstitutional and the fraud and all that other stuff. But why fight the extra battle? Just do it.
Yeah, I guess we're done, John. She's gone, and it's after 12, so.
Okay. All right, okay. Good night, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And don't forget, get involved, join a committee, volunteer for something, an hour a week. We all can do that. And and also, don't forget to donate $5 a month or more. We need money to operate. That's obvious. We'll have a lot of papers filed. So. Okay. Good night.
Okay, good night.